What you say? What you say? That's me.
All last night, do you know how many times I crossed over these things? Alright, we can be less obsessive about the microphones today because we're not trying to get people in from Italy. We just made that up. But the good news is we figured out the problem, and the next time somebody's traveling, if they're crazy enough to want to join, I think we can make it work without the harassment. You do still need to use the microphones. So one other point while Nicholas gets the list all tidied up.
We're ready.
There's a glossary on the back. Members of the public and of the committee are welcome to start adding to that. You're going to need one. So scribble away.
Okay, thank you. So roll call's over. First thing is... Actually, let's do the agenda and then we'll do public comment. So, the agenda today starts with public comment. It was pointed out that Mike's report yesterday, which was to be what happened when he reported to the council and community correspondence. Mike, we're just talking about it. I'm glad you're here. The report that Mike gave us at the beginning of the meeting yesterday was about your report to the council and also correspondence between the community and the committee. And what we realized was that the part about the correspondence didn't get discussed, and we want at least to touch on it. So we'll do that first, if that's okay. And then we'll go into the item that we postponed from yesterday and moved it forward to today, which is the presenters and subs, subcontractors. Then scenarios, this is quite a big piece. Outreach, strategies and alternatives convention. This was used to be called ALTS exhibit or ALTS fan. Then agenda for July and August, and then oral communication at the end. So oral communication is the part where members of the public can discuss anything that's related to the work of the committee. And public comment is where the members of the public are going to discuss what's on the agenda today. Any questions about the agenda? Then let's go into public comment. Public comment, you need to come forward and find a microphone if you want to make a comment. So this is where you're going to discuss the items on the agenda today.
This is where we discuss items on the agenda?
Yeah.
What if it's
not on the agenda, then it's, it comes up in oral communication at the end.
So coming here to ask about a meeting in Live Oak, I have to wait 4 hours to do that?
Well, normally you do it at the end. I mean, the committee can agree to an exception.
Well, why don't you just tell her what the plan is for the meeting in Live Oak?
It's not, the plan is that there's going to be one. We don't know when yet, and we'll do it as soon as we can. I'll talk to you afterwards.
Would the committee entertain me asking about this now with what I found out?
You know, we have people who do the scheduling, and we have people who do the scheduling. They work on the scheduling. I appreciate you looking into this, but and I'm glad that you brought it to our attention. I don't think we really want to do that now. It's off schedule, you know.
Are you willing to ask your committee how they feel about it?
Sure. Would you like to make an exception to the agenda?
Sure.
Would anybody object to making an exception to the agenda? Then you can go ahead.
Thank you.
Find
the
microphone.
Oh. Can you all hear me without using?
No, you have to use the microphone.
Thank you very much for your flexibility.
It's not my flexibility, it's their flexibility.
I thought I had his right that I do it at the beginning. I'm a resident of Live Oak, and we are tens of thousands of the water customers, not just 5,000. We're talking, I think, 39,000. So people in Live Oak have a great deal at stake what this committee does, and we were told initially that there would be one meeting sometime after the first of the year, and that didn't seem quite right, and so I'm here today to ask you to consider two meetings for Live Oak out of, you're going to be having 15 or 20 meetings?
12 meetings.
So maybe two of those 12 might be given Live Oakers a chance. I live in the western part of Live Oak. There are many residents who live even farther east, and so that's why I'm here. I did check with the Grange. Nicholas was kind enough to correspond with me by email. He said that the chairs were not comfortable enough for you at the Grange, even though it's a room this big with all of the amenities, and there are cushions for the chair. But he said that you would probably not be comfortable sitting on cushions on metal chairs for 4 hours. The Live Oak Grange has all the amenities that are here. So then I went to Simpkins Swim Center, and if any of you have been at Simpkins Swim Center, you'll know that basically you can get the same thing here, and the chairs are exactly like this. Nicholas did suggest that the room, and there are rooms available for Thursday, Friday, 5 to 9, 2 to 6. And I just asked her to pick 2 days, and she said, well, there's one in August, 2 in August, 2 in October. And I said, stop looking. I know that there are those available. However, Nicholas, before the meeting, suggested that the larger room is not available, that is needed, but I know the room that fits 40 to 90 would be just fine for what we're seeing here. You might have to get the visitors' chairs just as well.
The location of the meeting was not our issue, just so you're clear. You're beating down the wrong path here.
The location of the meeting is not...
Where we meet in Live Oak is not the problem that we had. So I'm just trying to tell you that going off in that direction is not productive at this point. It's a question of whether we want to meet in different places versus one place.
Yes, okay. So what is appropriate for me to say that 39,000 Live Oak customers would feel like stepchildren because this committee cannot find one meeting before the end of the year and is not willing to meet at least twice to make it a little easier on Live Oak residents to be here?
So thank you very much. We have three minutes left for anybody else who wants to just sit in the center. Thank you. Any other public comment? Any other public comment? We've got 2 or 3 minutes left. Okay, let's go on.
Would you mind just responding? It sounds like there is availability at Simpkins.
I actually talked with a lady before the meeting and explained that there is availability at Simpkins according to her. According to the criteria that I gave to the city and asked them to look into it, there isn't availability of Simkins of the type that she's describing. So I suspect that because we have set-up time and clear-up time, you know, she's simply specifying the time of the agenda, whereas we need an hour before and an hour after at least, and I suspect that that's the reason that either that or she's asking Simkins Center for the 45-person room, we need the 90-person room. I'm guessing. I don't know. But I was at the Simkins Center this morning. You know, we're looking into this. It's all going. Don't worry about it. We're taking care of it. So thank you. Mike, we're sort of dropping this on you. Would you like to bring us up to date with the correspondence that you had, the community had with the committee?
Yes. When I volunteered to handle correspondence, I've given myself the title of correspondence secretary because I don't know what else to sign to give these letters back to people. So people should correct me if I'm not or something. I like acting as correspondence secretary. My plan and what I've done for this meeting for the first time is to respond to every piece of mail or email or communication that we get from people. I don't know how we get a phone call, but anything that comes in a written form, email, or U.S. Post. And to respond to the person and then determine what's the most appropriate response, which is whether it's best to copy the entire committee with, which will be the case if they're trying to give us advice about what to do, that would typically be where it'll go. And you'll get both the person's comment and my response to them, so you'll see how I responded. People may ask questions to which there are factual answers, in which case I'd probably still, I give them that factual answer and share it with the committee that they asked, and I gave them that answer back. I'm reserving a category for people that are asking the wrong group or something. They should be talking to the water department or to somebody else, in which case I would write back to them, and then I would just share that happened. So basically, you're going to be aware of all the correspondence that we get of one from another and how it got responded to. If the person is asking us a question that requires us to take action, that would be my response. I can't answer that for you. I'm going to submit this to the committee, and the committee will have to determine how to respond to your concern or your issue or something. So as far as I'm being clear about it, there will be total transparency about this. We'll be informed with anybody who's trying to contact us. They'll get a fairly quick response, certainly within a day or two, in most cases, about what's going on. We need, as a committee, if we want to do something more, if we want to archive these questions and responses on our website, we can do that. Which we're sending out on the website, they can send us an email. I will be the person that will be looking down that list of emails that come in, responding back to them, so they're not just left with what happened to my comment. They'll hear back from us about what's going to happen with their comment. And I'm going to work very hard to not be in any way partisan or have any particular point of view about these issues, other than informing them about what we're up to, what the committee's doing, and so forth. If it requires a judgment of some kind, I'll be bringing it to the committee for action. I'm not going to be making those judgments or any of these requests. So I'm basically playing a kind of a communication role of making sure that everybody wants to contact us, that they hear you hear their concerns, and that they hear back from us quickly that that's going to be the case, rather than what happened to my comment.
Thank you, Mike. I wonder if anybody has any questions about, because the correspondence that was forwarded to all of you. Did anybody not get it? I mean, is this working okay?
And there's been no correspondence so far that you haven't seen. I've sent everything that I got. You either saw stuff in our first month that came directly to us at the meeting, and I didn't send that back out to you, but you've already seen it because people gave you a hard copy of something, or gave us a hard copy at a couple meetings. Yeah. And I assume that's already been archived by our staff in some way, or our consultants in some way, our staff. But from now on, I will also be keeping a file, but then I'll work with the website committee to figure out whether the best way to keep that on our website so that the public can see who's written to us and what they've been interested in. So far, you will certainly be aware of it. If there are more in terms of that, we'll have to look that out as a committee. I would probably do that as a recommendation through the committee that set up the website rather than just bring it directly to you. So we'll save some time. Just have a recommendation on how to resolve those kinds of issues, where it's going to be stored, or can get access to it.
Does anybody have any, thank you, Mark. Does anybody have any comments about or questions about the correspondence that you received, Sid?
I have a question. Question, and it's with regards to the correspondence that I saw that came through from Rick that was forwarded. And my impression and understanding was that the first several meetings, or the first meeting, we committee members wouldn't be, and I know Rick was responding to an individual, but that we wouldn't be advocating our positions or certain positions at this point. We wouldn't be, you know, politicking in the background, so to speak. And maybe I'm the only one that feels this way, and I am crazy, that's fine. But I kind of felt that that's what was happening there. I mean, I saw graphs and charts come through that you know, where they came from. If I'm off base, tell me, but that's what I thought. It didn't seem appropriate.
Thank you, Sid. Any other comments? Rick.
Yeah. Well, okay. It's hard for me to know what, what's presenting information and what's advocacy. We got a lot of information yesterday, and I thought that the materials that I put out would be helpful to people, because they're evaluating, how do we calculate demand? How do we look at our supply? I know we'll get into that as time goes on, but I thought, why not start at the beginning with just, putting it, what are the issues here, I guess I'd like to hear more about if you think it had consequences on our group that it's undesirable, because I felt that it was positive, so I'd be interested to learn.
So, David, go ahead.
I had actually two concerns about the correspondence of the back report. One, which you cleaned up, was making sure that
everybody was good. You have to get right on these mics.
One that was that which you cleaned up appropriately was that you were had to be clear about the fact that you were not speaking for the committee, but which you did, which I appreciate. The other thing, which to me was, in a sense losing sight of the committee's work, is that we are trying to engage in a scientific inquiry about things related to the water problem. And part of that scientific inquiry is the impacts of an insufficient supply on our economy, on our local economy. And frankly, I think it's presumptuous for any of us as an individual, and that includes Bill Texan, by the way, any individual in the community, to think that anecdotally is the way that we're going to define economic impacts when we have engaged Stratus Consulting that is in the business of doing economic analysis, including economic analysis of insufficient water supply. And one of the tasks that very much needs to be done from a scientific perspective is actually to do an analysis of that we might consider as part of the whole package. So, I think it's fine if you want to advocate your position as long as you're clear that you're advocating your position. But in terms of us functioning as a team that's going to make an inquiry into the different facets of the problem, that's one of them. And it's not to be, I don't think it's appropriate to do it by anecdotal or even personal opinion. I think that there's a scientific method for evaluating that, and we have experts qualified to do it, and that's one of the things that should be on our list.
There may be other comments which you want to go to, but I'd like you to think about, is there some sort of protocol that you want to agree to or discuss further here? Rick, you look like you're about to say something.
Well, yeah, I'm still unclear as to what guidance, you all want to give about communication with the community.
I guess what I'm asking and I'm concerned about is, are we as a committee, are we going to communicate with each other through Mike and start, putting together information and sending it to Mike and distribute to the committee prior to meetings, that sort of thing?
So the question is, are we going to, at least Rick has started to do that, and that's what's raised this. But, let's see if there are any, if we shouldn't be doing that, then we should decide that we shouldn't be doing that and a reason and whatever. So, David, go ahead.
Well, I sort of disagree with your premise. In the sense that in our charter, when we had the discussion in our charter about communications with the public, we encouraged members to communicate with the public, to communicate their experiences, to be clear that they were only speaking for themselves. And even when dealing with their positions they advocate, just to be clear about what it was they were doing. So I don't think that there's a particular problem with Rick if he wants to correspond with Bill, as long as he's clear about the things that we as a group have decided are the limitations of our communications with members of the public, which is what Bill is vis-a-vis this committee. Beyond that, to me, there's a different substantive issue about how we as a team approach the science of what we're doing.
Thank you, David. Does anyone? Yes, Mike, go ahead. And then, Ricky, do you want to speak?
After we're done.
Okay, sure. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I tend to agree with what David said in the sense that I don't think we should stop people from even being able to advocate if they want for something. I do think that each of us, it would be helpful to this group, and this so far, this is what I think is generally going on, and I don't exclude the biggest comment from it, to sort of avoid staking out positions early. We're trying to build a consensus here. The important thing really in the process is to be open to all kinds of things. It would not be productive, for example, for me to now, send all of you a defense of DSAL, or to argue, if someone in the public or somebody else makes a comment about DSAL that I think is not accurate, to get right on it, because I don't want anybody having a misimpression about that issue, because it makes it sound like I'm not letting go of DSAL, and I'm not going to be part of this process, basically starting from scratch, to look at the problem and figure out where we're going next. In that sense, I feel like, but I don't want to be censored. If I feel like somebody said something about DSAL that was just really wrong and outrageous and ridiculous, I should be able to correct, say, it's only my opinion, but this is what I think. But I'm going to censor myself from, defending DSAL. That's not helpful to this group. We want to be getting much clearer about what's the gap, what are our needs, what are the process, how much water do we need? I mean, that's a first question before you start to think about which alternatives are better or make more sense. So I think it's more like self-regulation rather than we're not going to let people make these comments or not be allowed to or something. I would tend to stay off of attacking somebody's particular solution or alternative or promoting it strongly right now at the beginning. The public can do that. Some people right now know that they think they have the right answer for what we need and they have the right to tell us what that is. I think as members of this committee, we want to be much more open to the process and have the scientific endeavor and so forth. And that's a soft thing. I didn't think Rick's comment really violated that. He was trying to say, I understand something about this information you got. I want to clarify something about it. I have additional information that might be helpful to think about it. As long as he says, that's my opinion, it's not, I'm not speaking to the community. I don't represent myself to be the expert on this question. I think that's okay. I'll end on this point. I think people need to self-regulate and not be quickly jumping on defending positions about where we ought to end up at this point. It's not helpful to assist the group.
Thanks, Mike. Charlie, did you want to go next? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to comment from an experience. The reaction I first had to the discussion about using this drought, this rationing experience as an example of the minimal economic impact to the city, which is what I think you said to the business community, that it seemed as if the impacts were minimal from where we are rationing. And my experience as a business person is entirely different. And my first reaction was, I'm going to respond to this. And I thought, we're going to start this serial meeting through emails. Do I email Rick? Do I email Mike? Do I email Bill? With my experience about the economic impact of rationing on my business and my industry, and I think we just have to be careful about making claims or offering opinions that might be misconstrued as fact, because it's going to solicit a response from somebody at some point, and then we get into the whole serial meeting. If I respond to Rick's commentary through the same forum, does that then have to be distributed to the rest of the committee, and are we then having this serial meeting outside of the meeting itself? So I think we just really need to be careful. It's a very slippery slope, and be careful not to express opinions as fact or to suggest that a single incident taken out of context is an example pro or con of any position.
Thank you, Charlie. So there are about three concerns, I think. One is the business of making sure that if you do write in this way, you make it clear that you're representing yourself. Another is what Charlie just mentioned, which is the danger of creeping into a serial meeting. And the third is what Mike mentioned, which was the business about, really, this is a collaborative group. You want to be careful sort of how you throw yourself around in this context, because it sort of changes the way that the dynamic works in the group. But Rick, go ahead. Perhaps this is the last word, I don't know. See how it goes.
Well, I share the concern about having a serial meeting, and of course I'm trying in my communication to be fair, but I think this is the place to have a meeting and a discussion. So, for example, if somebody finds something, in my letter that, they wanted to issue with, I would really welcome that. I have gone for several years without getting that kind of feedback from people. There hasn't been conversation. People are in their own silos and they don't converse, with a few notable exceptions like Mike, who always got together with me whenever I asked. So that, I think, would be the remedy for having, for dealing with opinion or something that we disagree with. I have one more communication that went out to a few of you. I think it went to Mike and Sue, who were part of that conference call. Oh, Dana, you were on the conference call too. And so I thought I'd just share it with everybody else, just in the spirit, so everybody gets to see the same communication. Because after that conference call, I did send an email out, and it has to do with the graph that was the chart that was printed in the Urban Water Management Plan in 2005 that had the city using the maximum amount of lock loading even in normal years, and what that does to our draft year. So I'll share that with you now.
Nicholas, could I say something, please?
Yeah.
I want to put a little context around the graph that Rick is sending around, and I want to direct your attention to the graphs that are in the presentation from yesterday, particularly those that are on what's your page numbers. So starting on page 25 and 26 and 27 give a sort of a breakout. I think that what you can see here is the actual way the city has used Loch Lomond, regardless of what was in the 2005 water management plan. And it doesn't reflect the strategy of using it fully every year. So that's whatever that says and wherever it came from, that's not actually what we do. That's the point I wanted to make.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. I'm aware of that. And actually, my request would be just to have our assumptions that go into, what our supplies would be in that second drought year reflect actual practice rather than theoretical maximum.
Well, and again, I'm assuming that's overtaken by events from the 2010 water management plan, but I don't know the details of that plan.
I'm looking for guidance from you about this, but it seems to me that the conversation about this kind of data issue may not be appropriate in on this agenda, David. But I want to wrap up what we began at the beginning of this conversation.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
I mean, first of all, Rick's correspondence was not correspondence to the committee or a response by it. The correspondence from Bill was correspondence from to the committee. And so, to the extent that Rick chose to share his response, that I don't know that, it's a different animal than what we set protocols for in dealing and what Mike is dealing with. It's correspondence to the committee and how we respond to it as the committee.
Yeah. What Rick is describing.
But the other question is that whether it comes in correspondence from the public or in something from one of the members, the question is whether we agendize the topic and when. And in the context of what other discussion. The notion that we have something come up in these emails and that we get sidetracked into a substantive discussion about it without context and without scientific, staff support, evaluation, and data, I think is a big waste of our time.
Mark, driving up on CAC, and driving this back, wrapping up with the topic that was raised at the beginning about protocols and behavior around this correspondence. But speak, Mark.
Go ahead. My sense of what's happening here is that we're spending an inordinate amount of time discussing something that's for which there's no basis. And I have a problem with that, and I think that's we have plenty of work to do, and there will be time in our process going forward for substantive discussions and sharing of viewpoints and such. And I think we ought to get on with that and not spend any more time on this. And I think in that context, I would share Mike's opinion and others that, you know, it's just not the right time for this. And we don't want to be distracted every meeting, because, you know, every one of us could be writing letters to the committee about whatever's on our mind about water. And if we take time to discuss each of those each meeting, we'll never get anywhere. And that's my number one concern.
Thank you, Mark. Does anybody want to say more about this, or can we just stop here? Great. I think we talked it out. The next item, then that concludes that item on the agenda. And what we're going to do now is go to what we were going to start off with yesterday, but we put forward to today, which is the... which is the issue of presenters and contractors. So, we're running a little bit behind already, so let's get on with it. We've sort of smushed together a couple of things in here. One was that long ago, about 6 weeks ago, we sent out that survey. There was a lot of interest, really, in who was going to make presentations for the committee. We sent out the survey. Some of you replied. I put a compilation together and sent it out to you in a packet so you see what everybody said. At the same time, there are some questions about who should be subcontracted by your technical consultant, Stratus, to help with sort of specific things. The one specific thing that's coming up right away is the issue of I call it the flow model, but I don't know what it's called. Is it called the flow model?
Confluence.
The what?
Confluence.
The confluence
model.
So the confluence model, which is a kind of a key element in all of the studies that are going to go on and have gone on. We smushed them those two together in this. As far as the list of presenters goes, one of the things that I think has turned up as especially Carrie and some of you who are working on the Gantt chart, you're recognizing that there really won't be that many opportunities for presenters or need for presenters in the next couple of months. I mean, we can put one in there if we really want it, but it's not like it's needed for the way that your work has been set up. But in any case, what I wanted to get out of this session, this part of the meeting, is an agreement on any presenters that you want for next month, for July, for your meetings at the end of July, if indeed you want any. An agreement on who to use for the confluence model. If it's not Fisk, who's it going to be? And then an agreement on any instructions that you need to give to Stratus about those agreements. That's where I think we need to go with this part of the meeting. One other thing about the confluence model and Fisk is that we've sort of danced around this, but if you were to say, oh, okay, Fisk is the only guy who knows how to do this, let's do Fisk. And we went ahead with Fisk. I'm afraid that Fisk would sort of go on in this project with you with a kind of a cloud over his head, because some of you have said, you know, we're not so keen on Fisk for one reason or another. And those of you who may not feel the same way have said nothing. And so he'll go ahead and his work will become part of the record and part of your, just a second, and part of everything that you do with this kind of, you know. So I want to make sure that we get an opportunity to say if you think he really is that bad or he's better than that, because he needs to be characterized appropriately. David.
Yeah. Would somebody explain what confluence modeling is and why we need it?
I'm pointing at Rosemary. I guess you know the right person.
So I want to turn your attention to slide 48 in yesterday's presentation. And
that's page 40.
Slide 48.
Yes, page 48.
Yeah.
Supply modeling.
Supply modeling. What the supply model does, and in this particular situation, we have a proprietary piece of software that actually does our supply modeling. That proprietary piece of software is called Confluence. But what it does is it takes the inputs that have been described here, hydrology, operating rule curves, system demand by customer class, water rights constraints, etc., and it generates a forecast of available supply under different hydrological conditions. So the slides you saw later in the presentation when we talked about fish flows use current demand, all the characteristics of current demand, 1977 hydrology, and current operating rule curves as they would, you know, normal operating rule curves. Those were the products of that supply modeling. That's what it does, and that's helps us to understand on the supply side how different hydrology and potentially climatological conditions will affect available water supply for us.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Dana probably knows something more about this.
It appears to me similar to the calcium tumor on a smaller scale.
I don't know that, I'm not a aficionado of various modules.
I mean, so I'm just wondering to what extent it is tied to the hydraulic model of the operating the system distribution system?
No.
It's not. It's just the supply side thing.
Yes.
Okay. So we've sort of gone into the confluence model question, so let's stick with that.
Wait, I just want to make sure, did everyone understand the difference that
I didn't hear your question.
Well, Dan's question asked was, to what degree is the confluence model modeling for us, in addition to the supply side, the distribution system? And my understanding, and Heidi, please correct me if I'm wrong about this, is that it does not model the distribution system. It's only modeling the supply inputs.
Does that take care of it, Dave?
Just a little follow-up. When it's evaluating the supply under different hydrologic conditions, does that include the supply that is generated through more conservation?
No.
Thank you. What we'd like to do is start this consideration of who you need to look after the confluence model and then how you're going to get it. So, Bertrand, you want to talk about something else? Or?
Sure.
Okay, go for it.
Well, as I understand it, I don't know, maybe Dana knows other people who could do this, but it sounds like Gary Fisk is the only game in town as far as, you know, being able to model the system.
That's kind of halfway a question, I think. Is he the engineer?
The Confluence model is Gary's model. He's created its proprietary software. As far as I know, no one else runs it, or at least if they run it, they run it as a utility person inside a utility for their system.
But it sounds like it's the only kind of model. It's the only model of its kind.
Oh, no, I don't think that's right. But to create a new model and to calibrate it and to get it all tuned in is a very labor-intensive activity and time-consuming. So it's not as though we could decide, let's switch horses now and have a result that we would feel comfortable and confident with in a reasonable time frame. That's my experience for many years, both on groundwater models and surface water models.
Okay. I don't have any problem going ahead and show this. I mean, they, you know, the objections that people might have heard early on when this, you know, technical consultant was being proposed before we had a chance to meet was it included a lot of the same players that led us to desalination, including Cody Jenks, Gary Fisk. But I don't have any problem with his expertise, and I think that our committee is what we're going to be asking the right questions, so I don't have any problem.
Right. So we may be at a point where we could actually... Oh, Dana, you wanted to say something? Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on one point. The reason I brought up the connection between hydraulic modeling of the distribution system and the supply-side modeling of hydrology is that, you know, when we're doing water supply planning, we're looking at these gross pictures of what water supplies are available and, you know, when. And, you know, just... because there's always water available, doesn't mean you can actually use it in real-time operations. And so I would recommend to the group that when we're looking at this model, we also ask, you know, for information from the city, say, hey, does this work operationally? Can we move this water when we want it, when it's there, to where it needs to be?
Thank you, Dan. Are we at a place where we can actually reach agreement on this? So if I said... are there any objections to using Gary Fisk for the purposes of the conference model? There's no objection. So we've got a consensus on that. The next thing is, how do we get him? I'm assuming that he would be a subcontractor to Stratus. It's your job to tell Stratus what they should do, or to recommend to Rosemary, I guess, to tell Stratus what they should do. So... would you agree to ask Rosemary to tell Stratus to subcontract with Gary Fisk? No objections to that. Great. Then now let's go back to the item at the beginning, which was the question of presenters. Go ahead.
That's a technical question. What might the city employing directly, contracting directly, like to go through another entity? But you always take some money,
So we do have him already a contract for other specific work, and I think the intent was for work that was related to this, he would be part of the Stratus team. And in a lot of ways, having that relationship between Bob and Gary is actually a value to help direct the work so that it works with what Bob is doing as well. So I think that there may be a little markup. I can't remember if this contract has a subcontractor markup or not. But I think it's actually a good thing to team those folks. And while I have the microphone and moving on, could I just say one other thing? So I just want to point to this the list of
the list of presenters that was in the package.
I just want to say that for everybody except for the two people, Sarah Friedkin, and Heather Cooley on the list associated with what I provided, you can eliminate those all because all that rest of that got integrated into here. So just the two climate change people remain on this list for us.
Oh, thank you for the clarification. Okay. So the list got a lot shorter, but... no less powerful. So the question is now, looking at the next few months, really looking at next month, July, do you want to have a presentation from somebody as part of your July agenda? And if so, who would you like? Does anybody have any feelings about that?
Yes, I do.
Do you want to have a presenter, somebody, you know, a subject matter presentation at your meeting next month? We could do that, yeah. So, yes. So we should just put this off until then.
Well,
go ahead.
I can see a value for deciding that. I'm thinking it would make sense to hear from John Ricker, who, as you know, is the County Water Resources Director, who's been at that same job since the 70s, and who knows, you know, the watershed, he knows the system. He's convened the working group of the neighboring water agencies to discuss water transfers. He's the one person in the county that knows the most about water rights on San Vicente Creek. He knows all the studies that the city has done over the years. I would like to see Ricker and Terry Tompkins from the City Water Department share the time with us, because they could really just give us a grounding of like what's been looked at in the past, what are our prospects now?
Ricker and Tompkins is your suggestion. There are two things here. One is who, and the other is when. We're talking about July, but others have said, well, why don't we wait until we talk about the July agenda, which is going to come up at the end of the afternoon. We have about half an hour for the July and August agenda. Would you like to talk further about the people you might add to the list that you want to have, or do you want to go straight on now and then talk about including Ricker and Tompkins in July? Yes. David.
I would prefer that we talk about what we're doing in July when we talk about the whole agenda. The other thing that I would just be mindful of is that we've already talked about the fact that we wanted Groucher through Stratus to orchestrate some of how we would get our presentations other than the Alt-Fair, and I would like him to have an opportunity to have that input and organize things for us. I would also bring to people's attention, if you aren't aware of it, that a whole lot of what Ricker presented to the Water Commission is what wound up in the County Grand Jury Report. He was probably the single biggest resource. So if you really want to hear what he has to say, I would read that from the third.
Thank you. We've got objection to actually dealing with this with the consideration of Ricker and Tompkins now, but we want to do it later in this session. Does anybody object to that? Okay, then we've got Ricker and Tompkins noted, and we'll bring this up again when we talk about July and August, which will be at the end of the later in the session. Yes, Mike.
I would just say when we talk about that later in our meeting, we should start with the question of what kinds of presentations we want before we start saying this person and that person. I'm not going to have a discussion now, but I think that's the way we should be into that part of the discussion.
Okay.
And why is to move versus others?
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. Okay. Then let's thank you very much for your agreements on this item. We did some important stuff. Next up is a discussion about scenarios. Here you go.
Thanks. What, you think yesterday's on an
hour?
Thank you. Hi, everybody. So, it's really unusual for me in my career, in the career I chose and wanted, to present. Usually I facilitate. I presented yesterday, I'm going to present today, I would hope this would be the last time, because you'll have Rafa and the other people. But if I had to present about something, multi-criteria, obviously yesterday I was fascinated by that, and scenarios are incredibly interesting topic. So yesterday you did the exercise, really one of the most difficult things is to separate what's an alternative for this problem and what's the actual goal. And the goal you can think of as the difference between what would happen if you didn't engage in any strategies and what you want the world to be. Well, one of the reasons that you chose the recon and then real deal process, which for members of the public who may not have followed this, means simply that the committee is going to run through their decision process very quickly without worrying too much about exactitude. And then they're going to assess the areas that need more research and work, and then go through the decision process in the real deal once again. So you're in recon. You still have to wrap your arms around a goal. And this is the way I had originally thought about it. When I gotten hired, I was job, and I just had my first impressions. And it was really hard. I thought, so here's all that decision model part with the criteria and the alternatives. And over here is a goal. And I figured that during recall, you would have a goal that was basically all about gallons, right? How many gallons of water do you need to find in the couch or make or reduce demand for? And so my concept was that you would, during recon, pick a number and agree on a huge error bar and not worry too much about it. And then, because of the way that you had streamlined and identified and focused your research, by the time you got to the real deal, maybe you could scooch this a little bit smaller, right? But this is all in terms of gallons. One of the things that should be clear from Rosemary's presentation and a lot of Rick's comments is that it isn't just gallons, it's the distribution of the precipitation throughout the year. So now you have two issues. Like, if you could get rid of peak demand, you might have much less of a problem. So it's not just gallons, it's the gallons throughout the year. And the other thing is, you don't know with climate change what the distribution will be, and you could end up with fewer drops of rain, but you could also get them coming at times that create more problems or less problems for you. So when you put the uncertainty around both of these, that's a lot of uncertainty. So that's tough. But as I abided with you all and listened to you and read the materials, what I realized is that there's a third dimension of this, which is the values piece. So these two pieces, gallons and distribution, are about the ability for a modeler to look to the future and just accurately tell you how short you're going to be on gallons. And if you're going to be really short, then you want this kind of alternatives. And if you're only going to be a little bit short, then you're going to lean towards a different suite of alternatives. That's pretty simple, right? But what I believe about you as a committee is that you're not actually sure how much you ought to close the gap. So for some people, your future vision of Santa Cruz is one that has a relatively small gap. So in a very bad drought year, in August, you would have some curtailment, if I'm using that word right. It's not that you always want everyone to be able to take a 20-minute shower, right? But there would be somewhere in the spectrum from excess to abundance to disaster to belt tightening, and there's somewhere in here that's escaping me at the moment, that some of you would be thinking, this is what you're shooting for the Santa Cruz that you envision. And some of you would be thinking, no, actually, we want this one. Or somewhere in that spectrum. Any thoughts? This is important.
Well, you're correct in your observation. I thought your observation's correct, and there are, I'm sure, great differences, and you can start that discussion whenever you're ready to have it. Is that now?
Oh, that would be a really rich discussion. Actually, in a way, I want to... This is strange for me because I love those kinds of discussions, but in a way, what I want to do is suggest that you put it off till the real deal. And the way that would work is, but it's a lot of putting off, I'm suggesting. One is, you would... There's so much uncertainty in the simple things, even as how many gallons of water are you going to need, or how many drops of water are you going to be missing, that instead of picking one point with these massive error bars, which end up being almost meaningless, that you take an extreme point in the decision space of gallonage and you run your model against both of these possibilities. So you say, I can't really predict what's going to happen with climate change, but so rather than try to just pick the piece that rolled into the middle, I'm going to pick two quite different ones and run the model against both. And you would do something similar for instance, with not only climate change, but with fish flows. So you would take the pieces that pack into your how many gallons do we usually really need, and instead of picking one point with an error bar, you would pick two relatively extreme points.
And this was described earlier as picking ranges rather than numbers, am I correct?
No, because here you would pick one number with a range, and here you're picking two possible numbers, and each one of them can have a range.
I see. Thank you.
So for the sort of scientific pieces, I think this is a complex thing to talk about, especially when you add in that you have to look at distribution too. And what that would allow you to do if you chose to use these scenarios for recon is it allow you to look through Rosemary's presentation and say, we really want Rasha to start studying this stuff because we think it's going to help us narrow down where we are. And maybe then we could use one goal with a range by the time we get to the real deal. So this is one thing that I described in those emails that I sent around, is the possibility that you would defer trying to agree on one point by using scenarios. And you would deliberately pick extremes. And then the other piece that I'm throwing out for discussion is the idea that instead of trying to agree on how many gallons, what kind of gap the city vision requires, that you would say, well, let's consider two possible types of cities, and let's look at what the decision model would do for us. So that's pretty complicated stuff. And one of the things that David tends to like to ask is, well, you're asking us to do this, what are the alternatives?
But I wouldn't need to ask it if that's the analysis.
I don't understand.
Well, if we've decided... What you're really talking about here is that we look at the range of alternatives from supply and how they would impact the range of results on the community under a variety of scenarios, which could be extreme climate change, moderate climate change, drought scenarios, heavy rainfall mixed into only 2 months in the winter instead of four. I mean, there's a whole variety here.
Right.
And broadening the base of how we look at the two ends of that so that we can start to see how alternatives might play out is really, you know, that's a model and a discussion we probably need to have. And it's easier for us if we look at a range than if we look at only specifics at the beginning, because I don't think we're in a position to agree about specifics, whether it be in supply or our vision for the community and what the community can live with.
In thinking about the graphic illustration you have up there, what I'm thinking about in response to that is there are so many other factors that are not on that piece of paper up there, not the least of which include a resiliency issue, like how resilient is our water system going to be under different scenarios, what our future demands might be and how they might be affected, what sort of economic impacts will result from different scenarios of supply and demand, what sort of quality of life will our city have in terms of its residents? Is it okay if we no longer have lawns? You know, I mean, that might be something we want to consider. And I'm just, you know, that's just sort of my gut level reaction to this, that there are so many, you know, how much energy are we using in our water supply and distribution system? I was quite surprised to hear on the tour of the water system that the electric bill for the current system is about $1.6 million a year. I don't know how much carbon that represents, but you know, we have a climate action plan that's relevant and, you know, been adopted by the city. And how does that affect our climate action plan goals? And so I guess, in a sense, I'm sort of unprepared to have a meaningful discussion about all of these, you know, that graphic. It's, for me, not complete enough, and I'm not quite sure how to make it complete, but I think it needs to be complete in order for us to understand the choices we have and the options that are before us.
You're absolutely right. And part of the way people think about scenarios is very technical and scientific, and part of it is that it's about being able to tell a story that's compelling for other people. And if it's missing too many of the important pieces, that's not a good story. Remember yesterday's exercise when we were doing the two-dimensional, three-dimensional thing? So we had the goals and the scenarios over to the left, and we had the criteria and the sub-criteria, and then we had the alternatives. So of the list that you said, I would say half of them were criteria. So everything on your list was uncertainties. And if you look at that whole map that we did yesterday, there were uncertainties in every single thing. Uncertainty about what the goal really is, what's the gap, and what's the desire. Those are both uncertain. Uncertainty about what you care to measure. For instance, do you care to measure economic impact to the possibility of having your grandchildren live in the same town as you? Is that a criterion or is that not a criterion? You have uncertainty about how to raise the alternatives. How do you measure whether a certain alternative accomplishes things? So your list was of uncertainties, and I would say about half of them were criteria, and half of them were complications to how to really define our goal. So can you remember your list? Because it was a good one.
It's, you know, it's internal and needs work, but yes.
All right, so let's talk about some of those, because I think this is a worthwhile discussion. For instance, so and ask the question, is it about how the heck do I identify even what my problem is, or is it about how am I going to measure it? So pick one.
Well, I would say both are on the table for me. How do I define the problem? And also, how do I, what factors do I need to consider as I define the problem? And so the first thing I mentioned was resilience. So I'm happy to talk about that. As I think about our water system and in light of the tour that I was on, I realized that pretty much all of our water comes from the river. And much, and I actually don't know the exact numbers, but I think that some of the graphics that Rosemary presented yesterday, the biggest part of the supply is always the river. And I'm wondering if that's a smart strategy for us as a community to put sort of all of our eggs in one basket. And wouldn't it be smart for us to have some other ways of providing water when we need to? And so, to me, that's an important criteria.
Exactly.
That resilience is part of the solution.
I did this crazy placement on purpose because you have the criteria that the council started you with, and they're not etched in stone. Get it? So I am now adding other criteria as they come. You going to move it to a better spot?
Okay. I just can't see.
Oh, excellent. So, right, so this is an issue about criteria. Now, naming one that is more likely to be about the goal off of your list.
Future demand?
Exactly.
Would that be a goal?
That's part of the problem. Well, it's funny. I think this is the most subtle and difficult one. Future demand, if you think of it as how demand will change willy-nilly, goes here because it changes the gap. But future demand, if you think of it as a lever that you can manipulate, is an alternative. So this one is just, you know, that's the mind bender. But it belongs in both places, and the distinction is this is the one that is kind of like the weather that it's going to happen, and this is the one that you're trying to turn the lever. Anybody have any other puzzlers?
So the
are we going back to puzzlers?
So as we turn the letter, it moves from left to the right, correct? It's not equally weighed on both sides. Is that to make that clear? Future demand, you can either take it for given and then tailor our system around, or we can use it as part of the alternative, so we can manipulate the future demand and shape it in a way or build mechanisms into the future demand that can satisfy our supply goals.
Exactly. And to the extent you want to accurately feel what your gap is, you would want to identify your gap in terms of what's going to happen willy-nilly. And you don't want to overestimate what the gap is. If you think demand's going to drop on its own, then you want to express the gap as being relatively small. But you might want to then make it smaller yet by manipulating it. If you think that demand is going to stay flat or even increase, then you're going to expect that there's a bigger problem and a bigger gap. So that's why it belongs on both sides. I'd like to stick with the puzzle. I'd like to stick with this puzzle thing a little bit longer because I think it's worthwhile.
Can I just add something? One of the things that I find interesting about this subject is that, for me, I need to understand the factors that go into each of these things. So one of the things I mentioned earlier was what sort of quality of life might we have. And that one seems like, it's kind of like when the city announces, or we find ourselves facing a 15% curtailment. If I pick a number, it doesn't matter. I have no idea what 25% curtailment means. I do not know what that means for me as an individual living in this community, for me as a business owner in this community, for my, you know, great aunt who's in a, you know, convalescent. I don't know what that means. And so, you know, what kind of, you know, is, and I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to understand in a, other than it's 25% less water. I can understand that, but does that mean I have a 3-minute shower or 2-minute shower? Do I need a shower once a week, once a month? Can I no longer grow vegetables in my garden? I mean, that's the kind of, I guess, qualitative things that I struggle with in understanding the impact of these percent reductions and millions of gallons. And I just wonder if there's a way for us to make it real.
And on to this, you know, I think it goes into the numbers you've got already, but just go drill one level deeper. Like, you know, how much a household or how much the average person uses, like 97 gallons. Or, thank you, by the way. So now, if you can find out how this divided up between toilet, shower, and dishwashing, garden, and so then we have that's just the basis then for. Then you can say 45% off, you want to take it off the shower or fill in that gap.
And I would add, I'm trying to do some work on this before. I don't think I got it right, so I'm not going to insist that I knew what I was doing about it. But when you're trying to communicate to people, what would, you know, say, what would be the impact if we had a drought like 77, you know, et cetera? You tell people, well, right now people use an average of X amount of water per household. Per person in the house. And I would say the almost universal response is, well, geez, that's an awful lot of water. And then you find out that those people are using way more than that themselves. The person you're talking to uses more than the average, and they don't realize how much water it takes to have a shower for 5 minutes, even with a low flow shower head, whatever. They don't really understand, given their practice, how they wash dishes or what they're doing in the house or if you water houseplants. You know, nobody, when you're not in a drought, you're not used to it, you walk around and you water stuff until it's watered. And then, you know, in my house, we've got a little meter and we're going around doing that now. So I now know what it takes on a typical week to water all the houses and the plants in the house. I'm still having plants die. I haven't got it right in the yard, but I'm working on it. But I think that's something that is important to understand. I think you can break that sort of stuff down. And the point is, most people are, myself included, pretty ignorant about what that average amount of water in their house means. Because, again, it's universal. I've never found anybody that didn't say, and we're the 7% most saving cities for water in the state. You say, this is how much you get per person. And its universal response is, wow, that's an awful lot of water. I could get along with a lot less than that. And then you tell them, bring your water bill. Bring your water bill. You're using way more than that in your house. I am. Shocking. So part of our exercise might be, and the city staff will help us with this, because we do have some idea of, with our shower heads, the shower running for 5 minutes, we know how much water that uses. We know how much water a 1.6-gallon flush uses, and so forth. But we need to get ourselves kind of steeped in that. And then you ask the question, well, how much do you use inside and how much do you use outside? So if you ask to curtail 15% or 25% of your house or whatever it is, you start to think, well, where would I find that 25%? And you start to play, you know, that scenarios, individual scenarios. So I think that's a very important exercise. When you get to the question of what is quality of life or what's our goal or what kind of community we want to live in, I'll just give one example to make the point clear. I don't think we want to live in a community where most of the time you don't get to flush the toilet. That's happening in my house right now. We're not flushing pee. It's not happening in urine. It's not being flushed down. It starts to be bad enough that it now smells. I've never had a urine smell in my house. It smells. So every so often we flush the toilet even though there's only urine in it because it's not a quality of life for me to have a smell in the bathroom and throughout more of the house now. So we need some discussion of that kind of stuff to understand our goals and our vision of what we want to be about. I don't think every 10 years you went through a period of 2 months where you couldn't flush urine down. I think we'd all live through it. But every 3 years, every 4 years, we're going to go through this where we don't get to flush the toilet. That would be my view. Other people would say, no, you should live with it. Find a way to make it work. So we need that discussion on some level. And certainly, we could discuss lawns, and that's a debatable question. But you don't want to have a discussion about whether in Santa Cruz you can't have any outdoor gardens. That's dead on arrival.
Yeah.
You know.
Rosemary wanted to say something.
Well, I just wanted to point out this. There is information, but it's not at the level, and it's not. And I think that the point that Mark made about making it real is, you know, these are a bunch of facts and figures, but most people don't have these facts and figures in their head, and they're not sort of thinking about this and really understanding what it means to them if you say this percent or that percent.
I would concur with that in discussion with people. You know, it's abstract. But I kind of want to go back to the beginning of this discussion because we're getting, I think, a little bit into the specifics of it and kind of more of that first page. I think, Terry, what you were asking us, kind of an extrapolation from how we're going to move forward with how we create our scenarios, is part of this question. Like, how comfortable are we as a committee dealing with, in this recon phase, that the scenarios we're building have a built-in large uncertainty, and that we're kind of going into this, and instead of getting into each of those specifics, we're taking a broader view of this and kind of getting to, can we get to a range, which I know you don't like that word, but you have your upper scenario and your lower scenario, and then working in from there. So I guess that's kind of my question. Do we want to start out with the specifics and move forward? Or do we want to start out with this big gap and move inwards? And is that what you were discussing, Carrie, with the two kinds of discussion?
Yes, and when Mark gave such an opportunity to move into storytelling, which is also part of it, I couldn't resist. Thanks, though, for bringing us back. So, yes, so let's stick with the incredibly complex but relatively easier issue of the how do you measure how much or how do you forecast how big the gap will be between the expected demand and the expected supply, maybe even out distribution. So Sarah's saying comparing the approach of picking a number with a huge range versus picking two numbers that are deliberately somewhat extreme, each of which have a little bracket around them. Right on our feet and bother with the brackets when you do the scenario. What Mark had said is, before I can answer that question, I need to understand more of the different pieces. Because there would be, I think when you're doing scenarios, you probably want to apply the 80% rule, the big things, the little bits and pieces you just forget about for recon. But there's a lot of elements inside that 80%. Still, here's the question. In dealing with the massive uncertainty that you have just around how many gallons of gap there will be, do you have any impressions, not asking for a decision, but impressions about the idea of picking these wide apart scenarios and running your decision model against each one of them, as opposed to trying to pick one number?
We identified two scenarios in this case. Would it seem logical that the greater the uncertainty, the greater number of scenarios we run to try to hone in on what is most likely?
There's two things. There's how much uncertainty there is, which is massive, and then there's the parameters. So you at least have, you have the fish flow issue, you have the climate change issue, which shows up with different faces because it's, and you have the distribution issue. So because of that, you would quickly have a lot of scenarios. So then you have to balance between the more scenarios you have, the less you can use it as a good communication tool, say with the council or the public. So it's simply a balancing act. And it might depend if you were to ask your consultants to, say, sketch us some of these scenarios and look at 12 of them, and then you see that they sort of lump, then you might lump some of them. Did I answer your question?
There's another word that I would like to see up here somewhere, which is risk tolerance. Or it's two words, but when you're looking at the element of uncertainty and how uncertainty in a variety of different areas, if they hit simultaneously, impacts on risk and what you can tolerate in risk, I think that that's something you need to evaluate. And I just wanted to respond to something that Mark asked. I too found the notion of what's a 15% or 25% reduction to be really elusive in terms of how it impacts on everyday conduct and lifestyle and enjoyment of life. As you get into more of the details of the modeling and the conservation plan, and when Bill Mannis does his presentation, it'll help to, that along with the baseline survey really helps to refine some of that, because it helps you focus on the degree to which different changes in hardware impact levels of consumption. And the biggest thing I think conceptually that I came to understand that changed my thinking about it was that the master conservation plan is built around hardware, like, you know, low flow faucets, you know, those kinds of things. And all of the curtailment planning is based upon behavior. Okay? And part of the idea is that the conservation plan has to leave something for us to do in a drought situation, and that's going to be the behavior, because you're going to be stuck with whatever hardware people have.
Interesting. So, how are we doing for time? I have a minute. Say what?
We're not doing well.
What time is I supposed to?
We were hoping to end this at 20 past 3.
Was that? No, but we added in.
But we started about 20 minutes late.
All right. I say that's good. Sarah, did you have something you wanted to say?
I know, I'm just being annoying. So I guess really what I'm asking for, and what I think you were getting with this, is our philosophy of our approach to this, right? Rather than the specifics we want to deal with or the criteria, it's actually how comfortable are we with having uncertainty in our scenarios. Like, a lot of us are very technical, and so we want to talk about the specifics a lot. Are we could we let that go in order to talk about these kind of broader scenarios that are really extreme, and we understand they're extreme, and we understand that's not the actual numbers we'd be dealing with in the end? Mm-hmm. Can we get to that point? Or should we go with the more technical information in the beginning, because that's really what we want to talk about? I mean, I'm kind of talking this to everybody on the committee. Personally, how comfortable are you with kind of, there's other options, of course, but weighing those different approaches to how we set up our scenarios will help us in framing the discussions that go into the criteria for this first round.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So the... it's interesting because we like to think of science as so neutral, but there's aesthetics in science as well as bias. There's aesthetics. And in some ways, I think, Sue, what you're getting at is what is... I wish that we're here. What you're getting at is just, I've got almost an aesthetic reaction to the idea of doing problem solving and living... either way, you've got the uncertainty. Sorry, fate gave it to you.
No.
But do you want to live with the uncertainty by picking a number as best you can and knowing you're going to improve on it and it'll still hold lots of irreducible uncertainty? Or do you want to deal with the uncertainty by running the scenarios on these relatively extreme things that let you explore the decision space? Would somebody like to rephrase that question in a comprehensible way? But once, just once.
Well, I can't imagine that we would be successful in coming to a single number as a group. And for that reason, I think it's going to be inevitable that we're going to pick two numbers. I don't know if they have to be the extreme numbers, but somewhere closer to the edges than the middle. One number in the middle, we will not agree on it. It's just not going to happen. I think we could agree that this... You don't have to go further than this in this direction, and
right.
You don't have to go further than that in that direction. That we probably are capable of, and that's enough to have a serious discussion. Then you have to have discussions about tolerance for risk and other kinds of questions, but at least you're all looking at the same picture. We're all looking at the same picture when we do that.
Could we just go around the room, starting with Dana, and you can pass, but just give your off-the-cuff feeling about this discussion and where you think it might be. Or not?
Sure. Really, I'm in agreement with Mike. This is the single most important thing that we have to wrestle with as a group, and trying to nail down a specific point at this number at this point, I think, is premature. And so we should kind of look at the extremes and start there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think starting with the bigger picture and then starting to drill down into it, you know, from either end is the better way to get started with this and work our way through it.
I'll pass the mic.
It is iterative. It's what we're supposed to do. So it sounds like just a way to close it on. I just hope we don't start with a net that's so wide that too many fish swim through.
And that's really something that will be interesting, whether you want to do extremes or sort of the shoulder. But you,
yeah, I would certainly favor the shoulder approach and the extreme approach.
And I think that if you get good consultant work, they can provide you the opportunity to say, yeah, this is, let's do it this way.
My tendency would be to start from where we are with our baseline numbers today. If that's what we have, it doesn't change. And from there, I might have missed something, I'm not sure, but from there go out and look into what the range is, what the different scenarios or the different uncertainties or ranges of uncertainty would produce, how they would impact the baseline number. Isn't that kind of where we are going?
Let's go back to that because if I keep...
Okay.
I think this entirely is actually not my question. I am totally comfortable with actually doing both because I've gone through that kind of logical thinking. I prefer probably a broader range to begin with. But that inherently has a lot more questions to begin with, and we as a group need to be comfortable with that, because if we're asking the same question over and over again in the beginning, we're going to spend a lot of time on that rather than addressing the bigger picture. So I'm actually comfortable with both types of setup. I think the broader range is kind of more what the iterative process and the recon works. But does that make sense? That's why I'm asking this question to begin with. It's like if it's a group, only two of us like that theory, then that's not going to work as moving forward because we're constantly asking the questions over and over again. And we want the specifics. Can we hold off on that?
Yeah.
And it's a personal choice. both are processes at work.
So. I'm comfortable with the direction of the conversation.
I'm also comfortable with using the two broader points because I think that's, we don't have anything specific to work on the reason.
Let's work on this.
I'm reminded that this process is two phases. This is the recon phase, and the reveal will come. So, in a sense, as I reflect on our conversation, I'm realizing how much I don't know. I don't know how much the committee doesn't know. But my hope is that as we move through the recon phase, by the time we get to the reveal, we'll have an understanding of the important factors that need to be considered and some definition of those. And so in that sense, I think it would be good for us to move forward with some set of numbers. And I think what Rosemary presented yesterday, sort of baseline, use that as a baseline, sort of as Peter suggested. And let's move forward and discover what we don't really know.
That progress. All right, so David.
I just want to make sure that whatever numbers we pick, even at the extremes, that they're grounded in something. And that's what I would rely on our consultant, our technical staff, for, so that even as we're dealing with the extremes, we're dealing with things that are within the range of reality.
Yes, absolutely. So what I want to do is turn the microphone over to Rosemary, and I actually messed up as a facilitator. I didn't want to start with Rosemary, because that would sort of seem like I was, but ending with Rosemary, that's not good either. So we should have started over here. So you don't get to answer that question. But the question you could answer is the scope piece, because you need to instruct Stratus about how to help you with the scenarios. And I think you've given a lot of indication about what you want. Could you synthesize that?
So I think that what I heard was that we want to create scenarios in two dimensions at least, and possibly a third one, at least two. And the two dimensions are something on climate change, and that might be a scenario, for example, a change distribution of rainfall pattern. And the other one might be extreme or example on that spectrum would be something like increased variability. And I don't know what exactly that means, but that is one of the things that people are talking about. So those would be the two dimensions on that one.
What was the same one? What kind of
increased variability. So that's basically even more variable than it already is. And then on the fisheries spectrum, we have a low and a high. We can tweak the high. We will run the model on what the DFG5 is. I think we can have that as a range on that scenario. And I think that some of the things that Mark and others of you have talked about, quality of life, resiliency, economics, in creating scenarios, in my experience, you can tell the person, we want you to tell us when you describe this scenario in a narrative form or a picture form or graphic form, how it affects certain things, economics, quality of life, availability of, water for irrigation, whatever you want them to be, resiliency, all those kind of, and you can have those be characterized for you based on sort of an elaboration, if you will, of what's happening in that particular quadrant of the, think of it as a 2x2 matrix. And then you get information back that gives you sort of a place that you can live. If I lived here, how would it feel? What would I do? What questions would I have? That's what I think you should ask your consultant to do.
How does that sound?
That's great.
Okay. And I would emphasize very much on the narrative side.
Yes.
That even if they don't need it, which I'm hearing they would like, it's the communicating onto the public that's also important. Okay, excellent. So we will add, and this is very much the way you described this partnership, where they're going to come with something rough and you'll respond to it and then they'll refine it and this will go on over several months. Okay, but we're not done because you included the what's the quality of life part. And
I just want to make sure this is including the piece about being able to conceive of what would your life and what would your kids' lives be like, not just do you have roses or succulents, but the whole gamut of things.
Yeah.
Okay. That's excellent. Excellent discussion. I really appreciate it. This is starting to work. And you'll like what you see. I mean, you'll disagree with it and tear it apart and put it back together, but I think it will be very satisfying. Thank you.
Suggestion?
Yes.
Take five, we're losing our quorum as people are going to the bathroom.
Yeah, I don't really believe in the five.
She doesn't believe in the five, but we do. Let's try the five.
Take five.
So that will be 3:38. I'll shut.
Go ahead and grab some fruit, and Sarah put out some plums.
Oh, yeah. If you
delicious.
Want more, I have plenty.
They're delicious.
The treats are good. Oh, yeah, I have six treats. Oh, wow. I have black plums and currently now. Different treats. I don't give you a chance. I want more. Okay. How many plums do you want? I have
minutes. Sit down.
Today's on that, but yesterday it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I didn't see. Well, yesterday already? Yesterday.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay.
The very bottom. Keep going.
Would someone be kind enough to just email a link to the committee?
Mm-hmm.
Just to have a Facebook link?
Yeah.
Mark is doing it as we speak.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay. Thank you for coming back so promptly. That was pretty good. Carrie reckons that nobody can really have a break shorter than 20 minutes, but you broke the record.
Once again, you surprised me.
So what we want to talk about now is outreach. There are a couple of things that I wanted to get out of this session for you. One was an understanding of the city's outreach plans so far, and that will not take long for a reason I'll explain in a moment. And the other is agreement on whether or not you want to have an outreach subcommittee. So I think that some of this discussion is going to be about, so how important is outreach for us, how complex is it, and all that kind of thing. So let me start out by saying, Keith is right here, and so he can answer questions if necessary, but what he asked me to say was, he's only been here 6 weeks, so really there isn't anything to speak of in place. But if you have questions about what the city's outreach plans are at the moment, you can answer questions.
Obviously, I'm a former TV reporter, so I just like to...
Oh, my God. Sorry. Give him the microphone.
No, I just wanted to...
Say goodbye to it.
I have only been there 6 weeks, but I just wanted to mention part of my job of coming out of the city in this position, it's a new position for the city, one that I've done in other cities, is to assess what we do for communications right now, what tools we have for outreach in general, beyond this issue. And there's a lot of things we don't have that we should have. Basic things like citizen newsletters, more of a strategic presence on the internet. The list goes on and on. So as I'm new and assessing what we need to be doing for outreach, this will also be the time where I can work with you, and this issue could be one of the first issues that we start to channel through our new communication techniques that I start to develop over the next few months. So I just ask for your patience as I kind of learn my way about the ways of Santa Cruz and what we're doing and how we can get the word out about this issue. We're working closely with Eileen, of course, and the water department does a great job. And we do have the resources of the city manager's office, you know, behind this issue, realizing this is an important issue. So thank you.
Thank you. So I think probably the way to start out...
No, that's not the way to start out.
Wow. No man's land in between those two things. So the way to start out is to ask if this is significant enough so that you want a subcommittee, and if so, you know, why is it significant? Does anybody want to speak to that? There we go.
I think we all know it's important, obviously, and that's a big part of our job, I think, as being in the city, we all have to communicate with public, so otherwise we have to.
Thank you. I was thinking as Carrie was walking, was discussing with you the question of scenarios, that this is so difficult. It's like, this is really a challenge for us. So think of how challenging it is for somebody who didn't spend an hour listening to Rosemary yesterday. It's very difficult. Peter.
I want to go one step deeper. We are going to make assumptions on a risk tolerance for Santa Cruz and the values and... So if we don't communicate what we are dealing, what we are basing our work on here during the process very extensively, in the end we might hit a wall that says, well, I don't want to come back for a shower, you know? I mean, the city council, what do you mean? A lawn, so, you know, whatever we feel. And so, yeah, of course, as we go along.
Does anybody have any doubts about the need for a subcommittee on this? So it looks like... can I say that you all agree that you need a subcommittee?
Yes.
Then where we need to go with that is, so there are the questions. What are the five questions? we need to decide what charge you would give the subcommittee. And I think structurally, is this something, for example, if we call this the recon outreach subcommittee, recognizing that the roles of outreach may be quite distinct between the recon phase and the real deal phase, you may be able to duck all the formality that comes at you with the Brown Act by being a temporary subcommittee. So bear that in mind, and then think, what's the scope that you want to give this, the responsibility you want to give this subcommittee? Would anybody like to step up to that?
I think during the recon period, most of the communication is going to be very general. It's going to be about the kinds of processes we're involved in, the kinds of questions we're asking, that we're on the case, that the things we're taking into consideration. It's a very different kind of an issue that we have decided this is a number for this or a range for this and this is another. So I think it's permissible legally at this point to have them be separate because, you know, it's going to be a different kind of job to start reporting. Here's what we decided, why we came to this conclusion, and to bring people with us to that decision before we go to our next decision in the real deal period. That's not going to be the form of this recon period. It's much more, here's what we're talking about, here's the things we're looking at, we're on the job, we're taking these kinds of things into consideration. Please contact us if you have other concerns. It's much more reaching out to people. We're at work. Please let us get a hold of us. That's very different than what you're going to do in a real deal where you want to report decisions that you want people to agree with along with us before we move. You know, it's an iterative process before you move to the next one based on that first decision. So I think we can do it as separate groups. I also think that you might have different people enjoy being in those different kinds of things. One's kind of a general assurance and engagement process, and the other is really reporting. How do you report technically difficult and complex questions to the public? It's very different than what's going on in the recon.
I can feel the hungry hand of the reporter.
No, I just want to ask.
Let me give him the mic for a second.
Thank you. Sorry. I just want to add, I think that's right. I mean, so for instance, yesterday, you know, we had the Santa Cruz Sentinel here. Meeting. I think it's going to be a story this weekend. Okay, a story this weekend about probably that's right, generally talking about audition and what's going on. I talked to KGO Channel 7 in San Francisco yesterday, and we were talking about various news issues right now, and this came up. And long story short, she basically said toward the end of the call, okay, well, let me know when they decide something. Talking about this. So, you know what I mean? So I think you have to be aware that quote unquote outreach through certain channels will be later in the process that it just depends on the audience we're dealing with. So just by I think there's interest in what we're doing. I know there's interest, and there would be any interest in what we're doing, but particularly with media, I think it'll be later in the process. With the exception of Sentinel.
We should perhaps put out a press release of the agreements that you've reached in the last.
Well, just in terms of the roles of the committee and strategy and alternatives convention, I think you all had in mind that would be part of the role of the committee, right?
That'll have an outreach component as well. It probably will need its own subcommittee.
Its own subcommittee.
I think so. It's going to be a ton of work.
Okay. Well, another idea then for the outreach committee that we're talking about now would be to figure out what parts of our agenda might really be most appealing to the public, and then to get the word out about those. And I'm thinking in particular, you know, when we have presenters, that might be really most interesting.
Yeah, thank you. David. Oh, Carrie.
Well, David, committee members can go.
Okay.
The whole idea of outreach and how we do it is something that I feel very frustrated about, in the sense that the idea is that we're supposed to be engaging in, leading, and sharing a community discussion about our water supply situation. And that's with the community that we at least my perception is that there's a small segment of the population that is actively interested in this, and that there's a large segment of the population that's asleep at the wheel. And the real question to me is, how do we reach the people who are asleep at the wheel? That aren't aware, and how do we effectively share with them and engage them in talking about the kinds of things we're talking about when there's things we're having a hard time figuring out how to talk about ourselves, and you know, that's sort of the charge I would give to the committee is how do we, I mean we've had the water problem for a long time. It's been a sort of a public discussion for a long time, whether at the commission or the council. It's been a public discussion for the last 20 years, and yet, for the most part, the community, there's a lot of people who don't know that we're in curtailment right now.
Thank you, Debbie. Go ahead, Karen.
So I think part of what you're asking is, what would this
short-term outreach community do.
And how they would do it.
And how, well, that's, isn't the how, yeah. So there's the outreach part of the idea for getting the alternatives. We're thinking of the SAC, did you really call it that? Of the Scenarios and Alternatives
Convention
as primarily substantial because it's the way you're going to get your alternatives. But it has a huge effect on outreach, so obviously the outreach people would be interested in that. There's the fact that the website committee at some point is going to sunset, and the outreach committee would be taking that over. And then, notwithstanding what Mike said, for lack of any guidance otherwise, in your Gantt chart, which I know you've all, you know, closely perused, and it is a fine-looking Gantt chart, there's a month in December when you take time to have an open house or something and report on your recon results and why some of your alternatives were winnowed and what it taught you. So recon is not just about press releases for your ongoing meetings, unless you want it to be.
Thank you. Great. So where I hope we were going is giving the charge to this subcommittee. And I think you've got some ideas now, but whereas Eric is going to speak, I'm thinking we can maybe collect them in writing somewhere. Can you maybe jot them down? Are you capturing them?
The things that you would actually do with the outreach committee?
Yeah, yeah. I hope it's going to start to get more concrete.
What I think the charge is, I'd rather hear from the committee.
That's what I want. Yeah, that's what I want you to write down. Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Eric.
I actually want to disagree with you, David. I actually think Eric is doing a really good job overall, and that's why we're at 7% bracket. And I think that the outreach community should celebrate that, celebrate the fact that the public is paying attention. And I know, basically all my neighbors are paying attention. Basically, everybody around that I know is paying attention. There's a few people that are sitting at the wheel, but not many.
Thank you, Eric. So we're getting into the charge here. The charge is help the public understand water issues. That's sort of the general thing. Is there anything else that you want to add to that? What else would you like to add? The website, because this new subcommittee will be taking over from the website work once it's developed by the website subcommittee. Mark?
I think it would be important to communicate to the public and outreach effort what we're doing. So today in the meeting we're talking about these things and highlighting those things. I don't know what's on the agenda for next month, but let's just say, like Chris suggested, we're going to have a presentation from John Ripper. We're going to discuss the factors associated with fishery. We're going to, and just kind of let people know what we're doing and invite them to get engaged. I can't imagine charging a subcommittee with the job of interpreting or condensing or consolidating what we are doing in some meaningful way that could be reduced to a simple graphic. Maybe that is a problem, kind of create a graphic representation of what we're doing, but my sense is we should invite people and focus on what we're doing and sharing what we're doing and invite people to come and see for themselves.
Thank you, Mark. It occurs to me that you might want to consider, so where will your responsibility and your activity end, and where will the activities and responsibility of the city staff or your consultants begin? Mm-hmm. Mike, you don't have to answer my question, Mike, but I want that to be up.
Well, I think the most important thing that they can do, this community can do, would be find a way to communicate to the public why this is such a complex issue. So many people think, it's an easy issue. Why don't they just do this? Sometimes they get up in front of the city council and they say it, or in front of us sometimes even. It's simple. With diametrically opposed solutions, and with no understanding of why we would be, what's this risk stuff? What's this uncertainty stuff? What's this other, somehow try and bring, we're not going to bring everybody up to speed, but bring much larger numbers of the public up to speed on why this is such a hard question to resolve. Because even when people have, Rick and I have debated these kinds of things, we've come to our conclusions about these through a bunch of complexity. A lot of the people that support either of our positions got to them by one simple idea, I don't like desal, so this is what I like, or I don't, you know, I want this thing to happen. It's so obvious, you should just do this. And, it's, and they, in fact, they write these nasty letters to the paper. You guys are idiots because you haven't done the obvious thing that needs to be done. There's no obvious thing to be done. I mean, let's be clear about that. So can we communicate that to the public? And so it's a public education. It takes creativity because how are you going to make people receptive to that idea? It's a very broad educational campaign that's not about getting them to agree to this, this, or this. It's to see what a complex water system we have and how much do we not know about what's going on so that when we come to a conclusion, assume let's be positive about what we're going to do, they understand what it took to get there and why they shouldn't be cavalier about throwing our suggestion to have a water like anything else before or something. That's what I think would be really useful at this stage.
Thank you, Mike. So what we've got on the wall so far is to help the public communicate, help the public understand what it is, communicate the complexity, work on the website, let the public know what the committee is actually doing, and highlight the presenters, let them know about the agenda. There was something else that you said, which was really... and get them interested in...
Invite them.
Yeah, invite. So, anything else in the charge stuff, or can we go... Yes?
Can I make a suggestion? So, I in light of the conversation that happened a little bit earlier about, you know, running up against the brick wall of community values, I don't really want to have a situation where everybody can keep their grass green or the opposite of that. Could we maybe ask the subcommittee to do some work on thinking about how and who might be engaged in helping to have that conversation in the community, and not necessarily to go and do it, but to come up with some ideas, brainstorm some ideas about how to engage that question.
It's just sort of like the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the charge. I'd like to move on unless somebody else has something burning they want to mention. So then, the duration of it, we were talking about the recon. So that would be, like, we do sort of 6 months, would keep us within the scope of a temporary commitment. The scope of responsibility, we sort of discussed that as a charge, it sort of got mushed together. Who would like to do this? Who would like to be on this subcommittee?
Doug and Sue.
But we actually had somebody here who's volunteering.
Keith and Eileen first.
Keith and Eileen will start it. All right. Charlie has put his hand up. Anybody else? And Peter. So we got two committee members so far, maybe four.
I heard five.
Did anybody else here have their hand? Was it sort of Charlie and Peter?
Erica.
Charlie, Peter, Erica. So we got three. That's a good group. Thank you very much. Is there anything else that... Oh, what about a name? Any special consideration about the name, or should we just call it the Outreach Subcommittee?
Recon Outreach Subcommittee.
Thank you.
Yes.
So, we've got to go back. Yes, this is a big one for you guys. So, who are they allowed to talk to? Who should they talk to? Who should they not talk to? Should they talk to anyone?
Definitely think that the outreach committee shouldn't talk to anybody.
We're just talking amongst ourselves.
In closed doors. No, I mean, I think we really want a broad approach here. So it's like, you know, with updates back to the larger committee, as you start engaging people, you kind of begin to maybe bring back to us suggestions of who you want to talk to. But, I mean, you're communicating at this point what we're working on, you know. I feel perfectly comfortable allowing you to do that. Kind of bringing up some of the questions that we're doing in the, that we're processing within the meetings and stuff is appropriate.
So I'm
kind of giving a really broad...
Yeah, you're saying a lot here.
...communication to...
Peter.
Yeah, but... Formulated very generally, I think you should...
institution to try to reach everybody in the water system and explore the different channels of outreach, which there are. They're changing my lifetime, so I have to adapt to the new ones.
not Twitter.
I know, yeah, so there's a lot you should be happy to consider. That's one from business to to high schoolers. So, you know, it's a really broad range and you shouldn't exclude anything. And this is part of a committee that is like some work to do. And so I would really formulate it as broad as.
So there's one Keith wants to see, but before we go there, one of the things that Sarah mentioned was the committee could actually, it needs to be talking with presumably the media and any sort of public media they can find about what we're thinking about or the things that we're challenged by. You're getting into areas that. You might end up feeling uncomfortable about when you hear what was said in the meeting. That, I mean, I just want you to sort of challenge you to think about that. Sarah, do you want to sort of say more about what you look like you want to
no,
say?
No, I was just saying that's kind of inherent in part of this. But, I mean, if they're speaking individually at a presentation, you know, the assumption is if I answer questions that have opinions, then that's my opinion and the rest of the committee, you know, that can be stated like said before and clarified before a presentation is made, but I'm kind of slightly comfortable with having that level of discomfort in the communication zone because it sparks the response, and part of it is we want to hear back from the public and understand how they're reacting to what they're hearing, so it kind of in essence gives us that return communication that we're looking.
Thank you. Does anybody else want to speak to this? Charlie?
I think it could easily become a situation that could become a public debate, and I would like to think we're going to avoid engaging the public in the debate, but that anything that we're discussing or suggesting, or we want to invite people to participate, we want to inform people about what we've done, what we plan to do, who's going to be presenting. But I think we have to be really careful about expressing a personal opinion, because I'll tell you, it's going to become very contentious. You start giving presentations to the Lions Club or any group of business people or any group more than about two or three people, you're going to have a lot of varied opinions, and many of them emotionally charged. And it's going to be really easy. It's happened at water commission meetings, it happens all the time at council meetings. People feel very emotional about things. They want to talk about it. They want to offer their sincere thoughts and emotions. And I, for one, want to stay out of the debate realm and be a reporter more than a debater.
So reporting more than debating. Mike?
I think a lot of the job is the strategy of communication, not the particular... You don't have to decide what you're going to say. But for example, we've found in the past in the city that the best way to get up parents on the most environmental issues is to send stuff home with the elementary school kids. So, you know, the idea that you have to, you know, send a newsletter to parents, not necessarily. Sometimes you just work it out in the schools. We have a communications expert who's your staff. Work with him and figure out what's the best way to reach the broadest number of the public, what sectors of the public are not reached by, they don't have kids that don't get reached by that. So, we need to do something else for those folks or whatever, but that's what I'd like the committee to get into. How are we going to reach the people that right now don't think there's an issue or don't understand it, and wake them up and get them engaged in this? And that's a strategy question for how do you, what's effective ways to reach people. That's as important as what the message is, because you can have a great message and it just doesn't go, and that's why you need outreach. It doesn't go anywhere.
Thank you, Mike. I'm just looking at the time, and we're sort of running out of time. Is there anything else that we need to say to be sure that the outreach committee is not going to spring any surprises on you? Yes, go ahead.
I can just assure anybody who think you're up in the line of, like I said before, this role as a liaison to the public, our role is kind of to say just the opposite. And we are there to, and the scope is pretty clear. I mean, our mission right now is to make sure people understand how complicated all this is.
Yeah.
And we are far away from having a solution. I hope everyone is far away from that, because I mean that's really truly where I believe in that. So being in that commission, I I can just speak to it, but I don't know what the solution is today.
Thank you. Well, I think that every month you'll have a chance to check in and see how it's going, and the committee will be able to redirect the subcommittee. So we've got our subcommittee, and I think that's all we need for this outreach discussion at the moment. I'd like to move on unless anybody has something burning they want to say. The next item is the Strategies and Alternatives Convention. And we have a little over half an hour to talk about this. So there are a series of things we want to get to. There's a lot in this item. It's a very big item. The first thing is we want to reach agreement, you know, without sort of saying we've got to have a strategies and alternatives convention. And so we've got to figure out how to incorporate the whole range, the wide range of alternatives that are going to be coming our way. We need to incorporate that into our decision-making process. We need to. If we're going to have a subcommittee, we need to agree on the subcommittee. Probably, if this is going to happen, there needs to be some kind of invitation issued to the world, really, to show up with their alternatives. We need to agree on that. To get some useful stuff and some comparable stuff, we're going to need to make sure that the criteria that are going to be used in the evaluation of all of these alternatives, the criteria are explicit. Probably pretty coarse criteria at this stage. But there need to be something that needs to be explicit so people know what they're aiming at. Those ones we really do want to reach agreement on, if we can, possibly. And then we can talk about scenarios, perhaps, that we'd like to give them, or even agreement on course problem statements. These you might actually end up wanting to give to the strategists to work out for you. But in any case, there's a lot to do on this topic. Mike?
Am I correct in understanding that this takes place without having any need to know what the exact gap is or how significant or whatever? This is like, I've got an idea about either a conservation idea that's not being used right now or that could be expanded, or I've got an idea where to get some water. And whatever that is, this is their chance to present that. They don't have to answer how, they should be able to say how much could be saved or produced by their solution. And it should be communicated in some way to lay people. We don't want to have somebody get up there and put a math formula on the board. And that's what I'm assuming. And give her this fair or this event or this, however we're going to structure it, you get this information back, and these people, this is their chance to say. The people that are saying right now, I know what the solution is, and you're all idiots because you don't understand it, this is their chance to like put it forward, hopefully in a nice and polite way, but to put forward their solution and why we should be excited by it. Is that what we're after here?
That's right, and you're right, that there needs to be some kind of parameters described by you that represent the limits of or the criteria that you're going to apply when you evaluate the proposals.
I mean, what I'm saying is I don't think they need to have to know we've got a certain amount that they might have a solution that produces a little bit of water that they think's all we need, or they might have a solution that's something else, or they might have some what we think of as cockamamie ideas. Let's do cloud seeding or something, or some clouds. I mean, whatever, and that they should be able to present that. If they think it's a feasible solution that we ought to take seriously, they should be considered.
I think it's important to recognize that there will be some proposals that will only take, you know, it's like this little piece of the problem gets solved by this little proposal.
Yeah.
And there may be some really comprehensive ones. I mean, who knows? We can't talk.
So we don't have to do our work before we figure out. So I don't want the criteria to be you must produce X amount of water or you must save X amount of water, Y amount of water. It should be open-ended for that and that level.
We need to decide right now, if we can, what kinds of criteria you want to set out to guide the proposals that are prepared. You're right. I mean, definitely. I don't know what they should be. Go ahead.
I'm thinking that also there also is a chance for community engagement. And as such, that's what we need to really broaden out with the categories of entries. So, like, we've got more serious categories of people who really, like, study it and have a serious solution they want to study. But then I was thinking that category for kids, even. And get some kids involved in just sharing ways that they save water themselves, you know, in their houses, and also what they might just, you know, kids come over with their ideas. Just to have it also be not just a serious thing, but also have a place for, you know, just more lighthearted engagement.
Thank you, Erica. Other comments about this? You all got the paper that was sent out, so you had a chance to look at that. David's got his hand up. Rick is waiting. Sarah is emptying him up. Go ahead.
I'm looking at the paper that was sent out, and it identifies the next steps. And one of them, I mean, there's really one of them that is the one that seems to me to require our discussion significantly, which is to agree on the three criteria.
Yeah.
And I would like to have some staff guidance on what they might be recommending in that regard, if there is anything. The rest is stuff that will go to the committee, and they'll come back with us with something fleshed out a little further. And you know, there's going to be the issues of filtering, balance, and what presentations will be, you know, face-to-face with someone doing, you know, talking to us about what might be just... you know, available in writing or other ways it might be presented. Someone's going to have to do some filtering.
I think there's some misunderstanding about the timing. Because if you want to have this happen and not interfere with your recon schedule, you would really have to give this subcommittee permission to get the ball rolling before the July meeting.
Right.
Oh, because when you said the subcommittee would come back...
The way this is structured, the subcommittee is going to be given some criteria by us, and then it's going to get the ball rolling, and it's going to do the filtering, and prioritizing, and determining the presentation.
Go ahead.
So, can you look at the item on page 3 that says September committee meeting?
Yes.
There are a list of criteria in that paragraph. Three criteria might be effectiveness, environmental impact, and practicability. Broadly enough, and the idea would be sort of, it's really the idea as presented here is a two-phase thing. One is between now and the July meeting, we put out, if you wanted to do it, some invitation would be put out, fairly simple information request to come back, brief description, tell us what your idea is, describe it, whatever, what does it take to make it happen, something like that. We see how many we get, and then if you like what you get and you want to go forward with it, then you may ask for some additional information. And the idea would be at the September meeting, there would be you would have all had a chance to go at the event, which would have happened just before the meeting, to look at all the things that would actually be physically presented at an event, and you would all have your little clip cards and go around, and you would be rating them. Not the committee. That's what's presented.
So what's presented here is obviously just an idea which we know sort of fits in the schedule that's evolving for your work. The schedule is really a big driver in the design of this. So Rick, you had your hand up.
I have a little concern that, you know, we want to attract people who are offering ideas that are feasible and rather than unfeasible. And so I would like to try to urge, you know, people who have ideas to attend our meetings where we're looking at alternatives that have been looked at in the past. You know, what are the current alternatives that the professionals are considering right now? You know, so that people have a pervasive grounding in those kind of things. Like, because they can come to one of those meetings and say, you know, we ought to put a dam on Zion, you know, which I think is not feasible. But they, by coming to one of those meetings, they can get the experts to say, you know, this is why it's not feasible. And then that way we can winnow out some stuff in advance. And it would make for a better event if we're not attracting a lot of kind of wacky.
One of the, as I said, it's the schedule to a large extent that's sort of driving the design of this, of the paper that you put forward. The way that you propose it the way that you were describing it, the way I understood you were describing it, suggests that there will be meetings that you will have where you will essentially consider these proposals. And what we're hoping is to be able to put the activity of your consideration of this actually outside of these meetings, because you don't have that many meetings. You don't have that much time, and to put that, to impose that, this process, that really a lot of what you're describing, sort of descriptions, general education, that kind of thing, and then the people would put together the proposals for alternatives, that would all be on your time, or a lot of that would be on your time.
Yeah, I understand that. My point was just to, you know, I think we'll have a better event if we kind of weeded out some of the unfeasible ideas. And the only way I can think to do that is to really kind of invite the people who have these ideas to get involved in our process, to hear from the experts, to actually even raise, you know, we have John Ricker come, people in the public,
so,
have public comment. Right?
So how long would it be before you think everybody would be ready sufficiently to
we're
present
at an event? We're looking at an event in September, correct?
Well, we're... there would be sort of final event would be in September.
Yeah. So we invite, you know, whoever, you know, this goes up on our website. You got an alternative recommend. Okay, here's what's happened in July. We strongly urge that you come to this to get grounded in with what has been considered in the past and what's being considered now.
So the July event will become an event, essentially an educational event. The July
meeting. Start regular meetings.
Can I just suggest something?
Just inviting people to come to the meeting.
Okay.
So your underlying interest is to make sure that the wisdom that you're developing as a committee feeds into these alternatives so that you get better products.
Right, thank you.
So let me walk through this beautiful Gantt chart, because there might be a way to meet your interest in what's there already, and if not, we'll change it. So the idea is there's two phases here, because one of the questions you don't know the answer to is how many submissions you'll even get. I mean, if you're going to get eight, you don't want to have a convention. And if you get 30, there's different issues that you have to deal with. So the idea was that people would submit a very short submission between this meeting and the July meeting. Very short. And you're right, Mike. It's probably not that necessary to tell them how many gallons they need to shoot for that. And then when you meet in July and on your subcommittee, whatever it's going to be, has had a chance to kind of cook these ideas, you'll at least know what the population is that you're looking at. So at that July meeting, people who've already submitted could have received a response from you all saying, thank you very much, and by the way, we're having this meeting in July, and your phase two of your submission might really benefit from what you would learn there. And here's a link to a PowerPoint, or whatever. So the second submittal, so those bars that have the blue line on the border and then little speckles on the inside, those are where the public is doing something. So they have a short period of time between now and July to just say, here's the title of my alternative and a brief description. And then they have a longer period of time after they've had the education you're talking about to submit again, or, you know, beef up their submission, and then would be the convention if, in fact, you want to have it. So by having the two-phase approach, it would be an opportunity for the education you're talking about to happen.
David and then Mark.
One of the things I'm not clear on in these proposals is if there is a point in time when, as to each of the submissions, we're going to get a consultant / staff report that tells us how the consultant staff or how we got here with this. Is this something that's been previously considered? Are there things about this that we should know that aren't part of the presentation or part of the materials that's been presented so that we can effectively rate them with the criteria based on a broader knowledge base?
So you feel you're going to need something from consultants or from staff that sort of digests what's coming in through this process?
Someone's going to make a proposal to us, and we're going to have what's on the face of their proposal and what's in our minds and our individual research. I want our consultant and our staff to look at these proposals and to, tell us this one is one that's already part of our master conservation plan. This one is something we considered or rejected. This is something that that, you know, is well recognized in use here, and we might consider it. I mean, whatever.
Thank you. I get it. Mark.
This is an idea that was shared, as you all know, I mean, with a subcommittee of the chamber every month, and to discuss what's going on here, kind of reach out to the chamber. And this was an idea that was really well accepted, that this is an opportunity, I think Eric brought up, this sort of outreach opportunity. And it also gives our entire community, if you want to get involved, this is a great way to get involved. And we want to hear from you. And I think it's a crucial outreach step in our process. And I don't think we should put too many restrictions on it. I think we should invite, like Rosemary said, any and all. If you have an idea, bring it. You know, we want to hear from you. And then I also agree with David's assessment. I think, you know, in the back of all of our minds, we have to do an evaluation of the merits of the idea. Is this an idea that's worth further pursuit, or is this an idea that we should just drop? And that process, I think, we have to go through no matter what. That's our job. I think it'll unfold wonderfully, and I'm looking forward to hearing some great ideas.
Thank you, Mark. So it seems, I mean, the first thing I wanted to do was to see if there was agreement about the idea of of the SAC, as it's called. And it seems like there is generally an agreement that it's important to have a process. I'm not sure that you're all agreed on exactly the process that was proposed in the paper. But maybe we can go there and see. What I'd like to do is to sort of drill into this and reach agreement on whatever version of this you think is appropriate. So if you start from what's in the paper, could we start there and say what it doesn't do for us or what it would do for us? And
start with what it doesn't do for us. Start with what we need that we don't have in there.
Okay. Start with what we need and we don't have in there. This is David's suggestion. So what do you need that's not in that, or Mike?
I liked Eric's idea earlier about doing stuff with kids, but I don't think it's through this process. I think it would be part of the outreach community coming out to the event, the kids that we have, and the parents and stuff, and kids and their parents can be at this event, so sort of a general broad public education campaign, rather than we're likely to get out of that the, you know, solution that we're, you know, can be implemented on a broad scale. It will be useful as part of the public education about conservation issues, all kinds of other stuff that we come up with. So I followed that path, not through this, but through the one of the strategies of the outreach community, which is the general public that I was going on here. Coloring thing. I'm not creative about that. It's something that we kids can find fun and bring their families into it.
In the mic.
Sorry. In the mic. Bring their families into it. So that's, I think it wouldn't be necessarily part of this formal alternative search.
Thank you, Mike. Other things that, yes, Charlie.
A couple of things came to light when I was reading this. Although this is a very tech-savvy community, it's all web-based, the submissions and the correspondence, and I wonder if there's going to be some facility for accommodating people who aren't comfortable with the internet or the web that would probably not participate if they were forced to do this through a computer.
Okay, so we need to have a non- web-based access in the first, because it's only the sort of the first round that's really all about using the web, so that would need to have a non-web.
Just to make it all inclusive.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Charles. Other issues, Mark?
I just noticed in sort of the very beginning, you talk about goals and desired outcomes. There's discussion around supply, but there's no discussion around reducing demand. And so it might be something that could be added that we want to hear about ideas to reduce demand.
Thank you, Mark. I'm going to channel Doug, who's not here, but who sent some questions in. He thought that to do with this, we should publish our criteria up front as part of the public notice, so that presented alternatives are, by definition, responsive, and we have a framework for responding to folks. So So I don't think there's anything very original in that, sort of kind of what we were discussing before. Rick?
Yeah, I just wanted to affirm, I think Eric had brought this up, that there would be a kind of different types of format for presenting ideas. I've been to events where people just get up like popcorn and there's like, oh, they've got a 1 minute time in which to present their idea, and that might be good for, you know, whatever, just a little conservation idea that might spark some other interest. So that way we kind of mix it up between, you know, the longer series presentations and just the brilliant little ideas.
You raise an interesting issue because the way that I was imagining it, as it's described, it would be like you take a big hall and you have essentially presentations, information stands, booths.
Poster sessions.
A poster session. So the people who want to evaluate or understand what's being proposed simply walk from one booth to the next around the room. So you can do it at your own pace. You don't have to be sitting and just waiting for people to pop up. As you say, some people just take 30 seconds, other people may take a couple of hours.
Yeah, a variation on that theme is where the whole group is together for 5 minutes, and then the people who are presenting kind of pop up and say, well, my booth over there, this is what it's about, and you know, so that they get a little chance to introduce the whole group.
A kind of marketing idea. Thank you.
Dana.
Oh, thank you. Dana, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just agreeing with this comment. It may make sense to give them an opportunity when everyone's paying attention to have 5 to 10 minutes just to say their piece, and then we can ask follow-up questions later. That way the person who's presenting doesn't have to say their story over and over.
Thank you.
And that may just come down to logistics on how many people, right?
Yeah.
So I guess I'll step back again. Do we want to have this be a curated alternatives fair, or do we want it literally open to all the public? And that's, like, we take the submissions and then we say, yes, you can come, no, you can't come. Or do we want it open to everyone, and then we've got the list of submissions, and we design our questions to ask them when we're interacting with them? They both have merits and are different approaches.
So the proposal, I think, does it both ways. Essentially, I mean, maybe not exactly as you're describing it, but essentially there's a very broad sort of come on, all of you, at the beginning, and then it's sort of filtered out for the second one.
But that's my question. Do we want to do the filtering out, or do we want everyone in the room?
For both phases. Mike.
No doubt, however you do it, somebody will appear at 11 hours saying, I missed my chance. Now it's April, I won't tell you my ideas, but despite that, I don't think you want to avoid a situation where anybody can say, I've got the best idea, and they didn't even listen to me. It's outrageous. I open it to everybody. Let people bring every idea, let it be seen. If it doesn't get through and nobody picks it up and runs with it, then you have your shot, and you persuade any of 14 people to bring it up at the table. But if you in a quiet room somewhere, say no to 6 people, those people spend the rest of their lives angry and talking to everybody else about the speech is closed and being considered the best guy. It's inevitable.
Thank you, Mike. David.
I don't think this is a discussion we need to have right now if we're actually going to follow Rosemary's proposal, because it sounds like that is a discussion that we would hear back from the subcommittee about at our July meeting. And that would be a lot by how many submissions we get. And, If we get a very large volume, it may not be feasible for us to hear from each one if we aren't getting a huge volume. Different things are possible.
So. Well, so we've got some really only small changes that you've asked for the. Go ahead, Sarah.
But that matters in how we present it to people, because in our first run up, we have to tell them if they're going to be okay. We're going to review these. And then you may not be invited to the actual event. So that has to be information that's provided up front, and that's why I was asking.
Well, you could tell people what the process is, and then a decision will be made on that at our delegate.
Let's hear from Rosemary, who wrote it.
So I think actually Doug hit the nail on the head. I think that the invitation would ask people to provide information on these three criteria, that are in here a little bit sort of, this is how these are going to be judged ultimately, but it's not going to be, that's how this was written. It doesn't mean this has to be. It wasn't an in or out. It was, you put in a submission, you're going to be in the event if it's a three-phase process submission, first-round submission, second-round submission, event, you come to all three of those, your submission, whatever you want to put in front of this group of people, it's going to be there. But the expectation would be that people would provide information of the type that would help you all evaluate those for at least those three criteria.
Thank you. So I just want to point out, we got about 10 more minutes to go on this before we need to move on to some other stuff and still get you out of here at 6 o'clock. How do we feel about the proposal that's in front of you, David?
I'm comfortable with the proposal provided you get the consultant staff input that I mentioned earlier. I'm comfortable with the proposal provided you get the consultant staff input that I talked about earlier.
Okay. Does anybody have any objections to the proposal with the proviso that David included?
I want to make sure that there is an alternative to the website. The earlier comment.
That was Charlie's comment, yes. So we got those two additions to it. Otherwise, it's okay. Good. Thank you very much. Then. Then the next thing is, do you need a subcommittee? I think it sounds like we do. The subcommittee would be the SAC subcommittee. It would be, presumably, it will only exist for as long as this process exists, so it'll only go until like September or October.
And your first job is to come up with a better acronym.
Yeah.
So that's the first job. And then, what other charges are there that we should be putting in here for this subcommittee? There are some tasks that are coming up right away, and others will remind me. There needs to be an invitation sent. There needs to be criteria developed, unless we're able to get to that now. What else? Somebody tell me.
I think that those three criteria ought to be discussed by the committee.
Yeah, it's better to have it here. It's true. There are actually a number of things that you could go to that I wrote down here, but I don't know if these are not so important. There are things that you could be asking the subcommittee and the consultant to work on about scenario descriptions and that kind of thing. But I don't think those are so important right now. Good. So we've got the charges. Basically, do what the concept paper says. What's that? And staff input on ratings.
Plus the non-web part that Charlie...
Oh, the non-web thing. That's right. So develop the non-web issue that Charlie mentioned.
And when it comes to rating the submissions, staff has input in some system that you will design together. Consultant and staff.
Any other additions to the charge? Peter?
We had the comment before. We also want to include suggestions for conservation, not just for...
Yeah.
That's right. So that needs to be in the... That's right. So...
Absolutely, I'll add it, but was that not clear from the proposal?
It was sort of in one of the bullets and it wasn't in the other. Mark was right. It wasn't in there. It was an oversight.
Thank you. So that cleaned that up. So we've got the charge...
But wait a second. There's something that Rick has got me to appreciate. It's conservation... It's making water, and it's what I call finding change in the cushions, which is the timing of the management. So it could be conservation or supply or something else, right? As long as it solves the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything goes.
Okay. Then the duration we already discussed. Who would like to be on this subcommittee?
I would, but I'm going to be leaving on September 8th. So.
That would be a pity, but I mean, you could work until September 8th if you wanted to. To be honest, there's probably the heavy lift is going to be at the beginning.
I mean, that's what I assume, but so I won't be able to do the logistics of an actual fair.
Yeah, so you won't have the fun part, but you'll do all the work. How does that sound?
I know, right?
So Sarah's on. Who else? Who else would like to be on this subcommittee? It's quite an important subcommittee.
So, Doug.
Looking around. Doug, Sue, and Sarah.
And David.
Yeah, would you like to be on?
Well, no, not on it. I'm just looking at Rosemary budget wise whether this would be a facilitated thing.
Oh, yeah.
Put you on the spot.
You know, I don't know. Can we figure that out? I mean, facilitated, if we have a lot, I don't know. I mean, absolutely. But
sorry, Mark.
So we'll deal with the facilitation question later. We only have one subcommittee member at this stage.
Do we really?
Were you waving? No.
Thank you, Sid.
Were you scratching or waving?
I hope you're hanging.
Thank you, Sid. Okay. Good work. That's great. So,
Greg, Doug,
they're not here.
So yeah.
I think they should all be on.
So we should ask them. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sid is the first alternate. If we get other people to volunteer.
But here's what I suggest. Let me suggest that Sarah and Sid get in touch with Doug and Sue when they get back and recruit them if you can. Does that sound okay?
And Dave and Greg.
And Dave and Greg, yes. Good. So we've got the SAT agreed to. We've got the subcommittee. The invitation has to go out soon. Is there anything that the committee wants to say to the subcommittee about what this invitation should say?
So there was a question raised about whether you actually need criteria for that first submission. This is what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
And if you did want to have criteria, I checked in with Philip, the creator of that software I talked about yesterday, and if you wanted to do that, he said keep it as much simpler than the criteria that you'll use later on. Keep it to 3, if you possibly can bring yourselves to. At least for that first phase, and then if you want to expand it after you have your discussion in July and see what's in front of you, you do. So that was his advice for what it's worth.
So there were 3 suggested in here. Would somebody dig them up?
Effectiveness, environmental impact, practice.
So how does that sound? Maybe you could say it again, Charlie.
Effectiveness, environmental impact, and practicability.
How does that sound to people?
Those sound really good. I think it would be helpful to provide a definition of what do we mean by.
There was a little bit more written around that, I think. Wasn't this it?
Yeah. Oh,
Charlie?
3 broad criteria that have to cover a lot of key concerns. For example, social and economic issues tuck into effectiveness, while cost and reliability tuck into practicability.
Yeah. But we could flesh those out now more if you wish. If we can do it quickly.
Well, yeah, I think after the first phase might be really good, because then you can see if maybe we could ask people just to write a brief, a couple of sentences about how their alternative for phase 1 would respond to these things. Sorry, I'm done.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with leaving it wrong, because I don't want to cut people out or make people think it's too big. But when you say something like environmental impact, that has a pretty broad definition, and there are, at least in my mind, an extraordinarily large number of factors that can be wound around that topic. So it might be helpful to clarify what we mean by environmental impact.
So these in the sort of instruction sheets, we could write a brief, this might include A, B, C, D, and E, you don't have to give quantitative answers, you might give qualitative answers at this stage, but to describe or similar kind of information that might be appropriate. So we can flesh this out a little bit to give people a, so it's not just a big old word that says, well, that can mean anything. What does it really mean? We could do that.
It sounds like, if we're going to you, Charlie, it sounds like these are things that, in a sense, you're going to be instructing the subcommittee to and the staff to handle.
Yeah. I'm fine with that.
I think the invitation should be as general as possible. We're truly interested in getting all suggestions. The majority of people are not going to be qualified to make these assessments about practicability or environmental impact or any of these values that we're going to spend months evaluating with the help of consultants. So to put too many restrictions on it up front, if we're genuinely interested in having people submit without fear that their idea isn't good enough or it's not going to pass muster, I wouldn't restrict it.
Thank you, Charlie. I think one of the reasons for for being specific is that it enables you, as you're assessing these proposals, to assess them in a way that the proposers will expect. So that although you may be being kind of restrictive, as you said, in the first instance, you're essentially making sure that the people who present are presenting in ways that you can easily assess and they will understand what the assessment is about. So, I mean, restrictive is one way of describing it. It's almost a sort of providing a sense of fairness in a way of, you know, providing a sense of what the rules are, in a sense. But anyway, thank you, Charlie.
Yeah, so Charlie, kind of in response to that, I was thinking of framing it, you know, that these are the criteria we will be assessing in the future, but we are taking any and all ideas to begin with, right? So it seems more open, but it provides that for people who are a little bit more serious and want, you know, more specifics to be able to frame it in those. Does that mean that's kind of what the approach, especially for the first call, would be? Does that sound reasonable? If we frame it more like,
absolutely,
any and all come with your ideas, and then, but these are the criteria we're
going to
be honing in on.
Thank you. It's good. Sarah is starting to draft this. David, go ahead, David.
At least in the first pass, as long as we're clear with people that their submission does not necessarily have to address each criteria when they submitted initially, so they know how it will be judged, but that it's not up to them necessarily to do the environmental work.
So I'd like to wrap this up now. We're not as far behind as we were when we started, but we're still about 5 minutes behind. And so we've got the agreement on actually using, with some changes, the paper that was presented. We got agreement on the subcommittee. We got agreement on kind of the invitation, the criteria was sort of mixed up. We're saying the invitation needs to be broad and the criteria need to be clear, and the criteria are what the criteria, what is discussed, the three criteria.
The committee will help define the criteria.
Certainly. But this is what we got for the July invitation. Thank you very much. Let's move on. I'm sorry? Oh, Erica, go ahead. Here's the thing. I mean, look, the Gantt chart is gone now, but the invitation for this first go-round needs to be out there before you meet again. So the invitation is not going to come back to you. Unless you'd at least... And what we could do is send it to you for a comment. Is that what you'd like to do?
I was planning on sending it to each individually for comments.
Yeah, it's one of those do not reply to all things.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay.
Does that work? We can do that, but if you're a committee member and you've now talked with 13 people.
That's how I did the bio.
But she sent it individually.
I sent it individually, so I don't ever have a forum.
And they will not talk to each other, and they will only talk to Sarah.
But we'll figure it out.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much. So we're rolling on to July and August, the agendas for July and August. And we're 6 minutes behind.
That's great. All right. I'm going to find out where I did look. There, they're on my head. So you have paper copies of the July and August agendas. One of the things I hope you had time to look at on the wall is that beautiful Gantt chart that Doug and Sid and Clark helped with so much. Ideally, they would be stacked all in a column, and you can look down and you can see the various decisions that you have to make in every committee meeting and the critical path issues. So far, we're good. You have done what you need to do. And once I had the Gantt chart in place and I could see the decisions that needed to happen under this imagined schedule, I went backwards and shifted to Clark. I'm just incompetent. Can you get this thing done? Did you guys see that I burned my clock? I stuck it in front of the projector and it was starting to steam and melt to plastic. It was a $5 clock.
Just get this.
Thanks. So what I did is I just went through and I figured out what had to happen in July and August. The other thing that Nicholas and I did together is we just put all the recurring pieces, whether it's public comment or not that roll call takes a long time, but reviewing the summaries. Even with the extra time that you gave us last time, you functionally have 3 hours of grist out of the 8. It's kind of stunning. So you have the July and August agendas in front of you, and we have the screen working. Does anybody have any comments?
Yeah. I'm wondering how, in this recon period, we're supposed to finish the recon with a kind of sense of what alternatives we'd like to look at more deeply, right?
Well, that's one of the things, yeah.
So, how do you see us?
I did it on purpose.
How do you see us being able to just inform ourselves of what those alternatives are? Because I don't find that out on the agenda for July and August.
So really, you're counting on this ALTS process that you just set forth to gather your alternatives. And that's the reason why you're not really looking at them until September. And you reminded me of several things. So in the normal envisioning of the process, the alternatives discussion would be very close after the goals discussion. But because you're doing this ALTS thing, you're not going to actually have the alternatives discussion until that September meeting. That's why you don't see it in July and August. But as you all pointed out yesterday, if you're going to understand your decision process, you need to have some alternatives to play with. So I want to talk with you about getting permission to just pick some out of the air to play with in the interim. But first, I want to stick with your question.
I'm glad I asked this question because I guess I see it pretty differently about how we get informed about alternatives. I think the ALTS fair is very important and it's a great public outreach tool, but the city spent hundreds of thousands of dollars over the last 30 years on engineering studies to come up with alternatives. And
billions, I have not.
Billions. So, I think we need to start there anyway and learn what those are, and that takes time. I mean, the SoCal Creek Water District has spent like 4 meetings or 5 meetings recently just looking into alternatives for themselves, you know. So I guess I want to suggest that in July and August meeting, you know, we start with a look at what has been said in these engineering studies, what the people who would know best professionally think are valuable in those studies to take another look at. And then what are the current things that are, you know, that are being worked on now.
Yes, Peter.
I want to agree with this. Just be parallel to what you said before. he gets the input from the public and alternatives. The opinions of those studies also are good for the information actually.
Just information. I think there's about eight things, or six or something. Six or eight things, major things that the city got to the point at some point of saying, let's study this. You know, raising things, the size of block, the dam, blocking, and a well drilling on the north, for brackish water on the north coast. Is there a stream under the sand runs or river? I don't know all about this. It's about eight, maybe if I'm wrong, it's 10, but it's in that ballpark. And we can certainly get those studies, why those were rejected as not feasible for one reason, either for political or technical or some other economic reasons. That's information that's pretty readily accessible. Somebody can present that to the committee. Because some of those will be
resuggested. Closer to the mic, Mike.
Some of those will be, these things that they looked at will be resuggested by people that don't know we looked at or maybe they did or whatever. So it might be useful at least to see drilling wells, in other words, you drill wells every place anybody ever thought they were going to be water is the optimum dry. So someone should know that, so you don't waste our time thinking about drilling smaller wells. It's done. That kind of stuff. So I guess I agree with Rick. Maybe if there is time in these meetings, that might be a very useful, you know, it wouldn't take that long actually to do it. As long as people do their homework and read the studies first, come here and have a presentation, and maybe somebody will then already know, we need to look at this again, and here's the reason why. Out of that would come one, or maybe two, that are worth looking at again. But most of them, everybody will quickly see why they're not.
Thank you, Mike. Rosemary?
So what I'd like to suggest is that actually this task would be a great one to give to Bob Rauscher and Stratus, and that the product would be a PowerPoint presentation that he would bring back to you and present, and that it would be an overview of the what things have been looked at and a description, some kind of common framework of things that might be floating around there that are on the table now, you know, everything from the recycled water and the water transfers and what have you. And that there's some, that it's a great way for them to get up to speed about the history of what's happened here to understand what issues have been looked at. So if you're willing to give me the authority to give him that task as part of his backgrounding, then we can do that with the idea that the product is his assessment of all the information and synthesis of it and presentation of it to you to give you the background that you're seeking in this conversation.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I would also suggest if you at that point already we include some of our independent review panel at that stage to get them up to speed.
I don't know whether we will have the independent review panel on board by then, but certainly, you know, the information that has been presented there is going to be available as a public document. They can review it later, raise any questions they might have. If we do, that would be swell, but reasonably, I think we have to put that out for at least a few weeks to get the kind of, you know, input or potential participants that we might be looking for.
Okay, so there's a desire to start absorbing the alternatives, but here's the deal. If you think about a decision as requiring criteria as well as alternatives, as well as the ratings, as well as figuring out and agreeing on rating scales, et cetera, within the time allotted, the discussion that you have there is what your criteria are. I don't see that as less important than the alternatives. So what goes?
I think you're talking about apples and oranges there. Rick is talking about us having a handle on what has been done and why, what has been considered and why they were rejected if they were.
Uh-huh.
And that is different than us considering the criteria by which we might evaluate things going forward.
No, it's quite different. But what I'm asking is, if you want to have significant agenda time about the previous work on alternatives, what's going to fall off?
Yeah, I think as you go along, the criteria will become clearer, and in the recon phase, it's not the most crucial, but we'll get to some criteria. But I find it for myself, that educating myself is the most important thing.
Okay.
And then I should become much clearer on how to rate alternatives.
So it would be okay to significantly reduce the discussion about the criteria to add in a report by Rauscher, a preliminary report giving the way things work, about the previous information on the alternatives, and continue with the discussions in that way. There was a hand up.
I would also say, once we get a report, as Rosemary was describing it, of why those were rejected, we're all sitting there listening to it. We might discover, once we develop our criteria fully and get to the real deal, that one of those should be brought back now, because the reason it was rejected is no longer. Maybe one was rejected, say, for cost. And that turns out to be not the most significant reason. Back then, it was a good reason to get rid of it, but you know, the fact that everything else seems to have been difficult, maybe somebody will say, no, let's reconsider that one, even though they gave up on it 15 years ago. But we don't have to decide that when we hear that presentation. We're just going to hear it, and everybody will be up to the same level of knowing things that, at least in the past, we rejected and why. And
okay.
They might not be rejected on the criteria that we're eventually going to decide to reject them, so we'll bring it back on that basis.
A couple of questions. So part of what I heard, too, from Peter is that for him, the criteria, in a sense, are an emergent property of understanding the substance and material. Part of what I hear from you is that as you look at the alternatives, they may have been rejected under a different filter than you're going to apply. The city's going to submit alternatives just like everybody else, correct?
Yes. 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 So, wait, I have something else to say. So I guess the other thing that I would say is that with respect to the criteria conversation, it seems to me that if you start really talking about the scenarios and kind of, and the nature of the conversation you were having about the scenarios, at least as I think about what they're going to be, and maybe I have the advantage of you there, is that the conversation there will also surface criteria that are important to you. It's another way of getting to that set of information. The other suggestion I have that might meet some other interests that I heard expressed earlier is, rather than ask John Ricker and Perry to give presentations on, you know, their views, perhaps we could ask them to sort of be commentators on the presentation that Stratus gives.
Right, because you won't have the IRP yet.
Right, and that they could sort of, as we go through that process, because they have the history of the long-term history, could make comments that would, you know, tell a little story or reflect something that happened that built in that sense that I've heard people wanting to talk or hear from those people about their sort of big picture, long-term perspective.
So that would balance something else that you talked about way before when you're talking about consultants of wanting the fresh look as well as the old wisdom. All right, David.
I'll go to that, and you also might involve people from the department as commentators also, because there's a couple of them, you know, like Toby and Heidi, who also, because of the work that they've done in the last 10 years, have really got perspective.
Maybe we could put them like in a gallery with peanuts, and they could.
Right. Yeah, they can go, I want to say something, I want to say something.
So that looks like something that would happen in July and August. And that's interesting, too, because in your idea, Rick, of having people come, people who want to submit and who are serious about submitting, and they were invited to the July and the August meeting, it could help them refine their thinking up to the convention. All right. Any other comments? All right. So this is a great modification of the scheme. Thank you so much. So aside from that, when you look at the agenda and the flow of that, any thoughts?
Well, yeah. I mean, in terms of sequence, I agree with Peter that having the presentation that we talked about from Rauscher with the commentary is going to help inform us so that we can more effectively discuss the criteria. So we need to resequence things because and
oh, the sequence during the day, that'll change so much.
Okay.
It's more the chunks of time. The way mine works, I just can't see how much time it takes unless I'm laying in a series.
That's fine.
It'll change. You've got your own. Yeah.
We have an hour allocated to the initial review of the all submissions in our next agenda meeting. Or next meeting. I'm not sure we need an hour for that. It might be something where we just kind of get a report on progress from the subcommittee rather than really dive into it. It might be a little premature for a full-blown discussion. I would suggest that we sort of limit that to a report on progress. We got 10 submissions, they're in your packet, and maybe that's it.
You are going to have to decide if you want to ask for another deeper round of questions. So that might take a little bit more time. But I hear what you're saying. You don't want to delve into the details of the submissions until the end of the process.
I actually suggest that we don't do that step.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the subcommittee can decide otherwise, but I think it's better to just say, yeah, come on, and not get into a lot of discussion in advance. We're going to have the all spare of the staff. And that would be the time to get into the nitty-gritty of the proposals and not spend a lot of time before that.
Okay. So we shrink that a bit.
Mr. Mayor. We should also assume that the people, at least the vast majority of people making these presentations, have some understanding of what would be reasonable criteria for consideration of their ideas, that, you know, it can't cost more than we have, it can't destroy the world, it can't, and we don't have to tell them all those things because we're seeing their adults and they're understanding
okay.
What's going on. Right?
So those are subcommittee da-da-da ideas.
Yeah.
Any more emphasis switches on at least the July agenda? If it's just about timing, I wouldn't worry about the August one because things are going to change a lot. I mean, the big change was that you want to be reviewing alternatives between now and then, and that works great for another thing that you asked, which is, can we play with the model a little bit? Well, you can't play with model unless you have some alternatives to stick in there. So, excellent. Synergy. Is this just fatigue, or, like, you're so excited about this great July and August thing that you can hardly contain yourselves?
One more suggestion.
Yes.
There were criteria in the integrated water plan that I'm sure we're going to agree with. So we could just get, I volunteered to bring copies of that if people want to see that too.
Well, one of the things that you assigned, Nicholas, or that you're going to have some compilations of criteria to work off of instead of starting from scratch.
Okay.
Okay, anything else?
It's like 9 o'clock coming down.
Are we done an hour early?
No,
we have
it's a beautiful
oral
day.
Communication.
Oral communication and
evaluation.
And the evaluations, and oh my gosh, none of you is getting out of this room until you turn in your evaluations. All right, and do we have any oral communications that either one of you two stalwart survivors wish to make? You can talk for half an hour or so.
I enjoyed and appreciated it.
Come and grab one.
Especially the positives.
I enjoy listening and I enjoy and appreciate listening to all of you raise ideas and explore considerations throughout the afternoon and yesterday too. Thanks. I appreciate also the sensitivity to community participation.
Yes, Mark.
Since we have an extra hour.
We're going to have the presentation again.
I don't like where this is going.
We didn't really talk about the presenters, which were a subject of some discussion earlier.
That's right, we were going to come
well,
back.
Well, no, we did.
And
didn't we?
We said that
we were going to revisit it.
But then the role of commentators on the presentation.
We did say
they're going to be. So the Rauscher will present about the alternatives, and John Ricker, and I don't know what his name is.
Terry Tompkins.
Terry Tompkins, not an H, and possibly some staff will act like commentators to those presentations. So that's their role. That is the answer to that question. Is
but
that
there
correct?
Are other presenters on our list that we didn't discuss when it might be appropriate to hear from them.
Ah, and I had understood from the previous discussion incorrectly that those presenters were more likely to appear in the real deal. So correct me. Who are the other presenters that you would like to see during RECON?
Well, frankly, I would like us to see Trevi Systems. That's why I suggested them, to see them early, because we're considering all alternatives, and one of the big knocks on the ESAL alternative has been its energy consumption, and it's a huge problem, and they have a system that reduces the energy consumption. And in terms of learning about different alternatives, I think that's one.
So, if I've got it right, October is the main month for ratings. So, if it's okay with the rest of the committee, that would be the timing?
I'm not picky about the timing.
Okay.
And I'm not picky about whether it happens at the end of RECON or at the beginning of the real deal as we consider alternatives.
Right. Okay.
Is that a SAC
item? So yeah, that's the question I had, is can we invite them to submit in the alternative kind of strategy?
Possibly, although I'd really like to know what Rauscher and staff think of their technology and whether it's a viable alternative that has benefits for us.
Well, and that is a different question from necessarily having them come and present here. That might be a research question that we would want to say, you know, we're aware of this technology and that technology and something else that we really want, and we could give that to... At some point, this meeting or next meeting, we could give them certain tasks related to researching ideas that the committee agrees need to be looked into.
And that could be said, by the way, you know, that process of having our staff and consultant look at some of these presenters and determine when they might be best incorporated into our process, if at all, is a process that I'm comfortable with. Because, for example, Bill Teichling is a niche within the larger question of how we evaluate the economic impacts of shortages in our water supply. And Donna Myers will help relate to the fisheries thing, which we have staff that we do too.
Well, how about this? How about if this list, and this is, I almost feel like I'm channeling you right now, Mr. Baskin. How about if staff and consultants, see, I got them both, come with some, look at that Gantt chart and say, this person belongs here and here and here, and this is what we think. July, and so that goes on the July agenda. Everybody okay with that? July agenda is a forecast of where the various presenters might appear.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, the list of presenters will be considered at our July, during our July meeting as part of the agenda with Mr. Rauscher's input and staff's input in terms of where they fit into the presentation of concepts.
Not
is
just
that correct.
That is correct.
I'm wondering if Rosemary can look to see. I must have sent 10 different individuals or groups to talk to Bill Kirkwood in the past who had ideas about things.
I've heard from most of them, I think.
but one of the researchers said that they need to contact. It gives you a chance again.
Yeah.
Bill said, no, go away, I don't like your project or whatever, but now they have a chance to, whether it's going to be done as a presentation, or some formal one, or maybe all school, I'll leave it to you guys to figure out, but they should be told that they have another shot at this.
We have a few of them who come to these meetings. I mean, we had Jerry Paul, we've had Bill B. Willing, both of them have been here, and you know, this is a good venue for them to present.
There was a guy that had something from the world of oil separation that thought could be applied to water. Nobody's ever done it before, but that guy should have a chance to explain. He has what he thinks is a very cheap way to desalinate water, but not using technology.
And I know that Doug has talked to somebody over at Stanford. So there, I mean, anybody who has an idea of somebody who needs to be reached out to relative to technology or the Altair invitation, please feel free to send it to, you know, one of us, all of us, the committee members, and Sarah, me, Sid, to work on this, because it's real, to make this really work, we need to get it out there and make sure people know that they have an opportunity.
So So I'm a little fried at the end of this day, but which fairy tale is it where there's the fairy godmothers and you have to be sure you invite them all?
Oh, that's Sleeping Beauty.
Sleeping Beauty, indeed. All right, Charlie, tell me what you think about where we are now, and then we'll go clockwise around the room.
I think we're finally getting to the meat of the matter.
Microphone.
I'm encouraged. I think we're making progress, getting just past structure and deceptions and ways to look at it.
Peter.
I'm with Charlie, actually. Glad to talk about the real stuff now. So.
That's right. This is the exciting part to be
I feel very satisfied.
Surprised you're out of here a little
early. Nicholas, how did you let that happen?
What?
His clock was on Rauscher's time.
Thank you, Bob. See, you already have something to thank Bob Rauscher for. Who would have thunk it?
I would have expected that 14 or 11 of us, 14 today or whatever, would be such an effective group working together. There's usually somebody that throws bombs in the group or that disrupts stuff or wastes all of our time, and I'm very impressed with the way this group is working, and I think we're definitely on track.
I agree with Martin.
I'm happy.
Yeah, I feel good about the fastest team. We're heading in the right direction.
Excellent.
I'm just really happy to be on the subcommittee.
How many are there?
1.5.
I'm impressed with how well people are approaching collaboration and being open about things.
Excellent. And what are you
going to
say?
Oh, my God. Well, you sit. You know, I went to a luncheon earlier this week, and I met three different strangers, and when I introduced myself and said why I was here, all three of them had responses like, oh, I feel so sorry for you, or oh, that'll never work. So when I started at Outreach Committee, I'm like, are you crazy? I've never worked with a committee like this before, and the staff, I'm just ecstatic. And they're like, oh, okay. I am...
It's true, you know, that's absolutely true. I mean, when people say, oh, Nicholas, I hear you're working in Sacramento. So I say, and they're so tough down there, you know, they're really, really sort of wound up about this water thing and the diesel and all that. And I say, well, yeah, but it's very difficult, but it's a good group and it's really going well. So you're famous. For the wrong things.
We're notorious.
But you're notorious for the wrong things, but we'll change your... the word will get out that actually you're good at this.
So I just have one thing to say. Yeah. Since I'm not going to see most of you until the next meeting, I just wanted to give you a heads up about a couple of things that are going on. You all are now going to receive the Water Commission mailing, which goes out next week. And I did want to let you know that in that packet, along with the presentation for the rate proposals and study that we promised last month, we are going to be providing the credit ratings for rating reports from Standard & Poor's and Fitch. And Water Department's downgraded, our credit was downgraded. There are a typical double A, and we went to double A minus for in Standard & Poor's, and Fitch puts down 2 to 8+. The reasons are basically lack of resolution of the water supply issue, drought, obviously the financial impacts of drought, and uncertainty relative to the rate increases that are needed to fund the capital and ongoing operations of the community. So it's not the end of the world. We are in the process of refinancing some debt, and then we will be issuing some new debt to support our capital program in the fall after the rates are fully through the process. But I did want you to have a chance to know that. The reports, when you see them in the Water Commission packet, I think actually give a pretty consistent for both of the agencies, third-party view of what's going on here, and they're interesting and educational for that reason, if nothing else.
So with that, happy Friday.
Really, happy Friday. You're all rooted to your seats. But you can go. Thank you.
Thank you.